Good Thursday to you. Thank you so much for tuning in to another edition of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by our friends at Nosler and our on-location sponsor, Adcor Defense. SHOT Show 2016. So why are we showing you pictures of Old Town Alexandria? Well, that's because we're doing something a little bit different today. You may notice if you are watching online, I am not in Las Vegas. It is because we have a blizzard headed towards D.C., and our flight home from SHOT Show was scheduled to land right in the thick of the snowy weather. So we figured that a couple of us better get back here now, just so we can do a show on Monday. Meanwhile, we have a full crew in Las Vegas, and we will be going there all afternoon. Jared Ogden, former Navy SEAL, going to join us. He went on a hunt recently with our friend Jana Waller. Pete Brownell of Brownells ran into Pete last night at SHOT Show before we left on the red eye. So if I seem a little woozy, that's what 2.5 hours of sleep in turbulent weather over this system that'll be dumping all of this snow will do to a guy. But I talked with Pete Brownell last night, and we didn't even talk about what we're going to be discussing this afternoon. This is fantastic. Brownells and the Special Operations Wounded Warrior Foundation are partnering up to raffle off a rifle, an Axelson tactical rifle, in honor of Matt Axelson, Axe. You know, if you watched our program on Tuesday of this week, you saw our interview with Ron Bellin from Reaper Outdoors. And Ron's got his line of rifles that's produced through Axelson Tactical. I've had the opportunity to meet Jeff Axelson, Axe's brother. In fact, I got a chance to meet Matt Axelson and Jeff Axelson's dad this week, Corky. And it is it's a great family business, and just some great people. And of course, Matt Axelson, a great American warrior. And so we'll talk with Pete Brownell about that coming up later on in the hour. Speaking of great American warriors, Jason Redman, former Navy SEAL, now with the Combat Wounded Coalition. He's out at SHOT Show. He'll join us. He has a brand new knife, actually, that he is unveiling. It's the Overcome knife, and we'll talk with Jason about that, as well as the Combat Wounded Coalition. Fox News contributor Richard Grinnell will join us from the SHOT Show as well. Katie Pavlich of Town Hall. J.R. Salzman, wounded warrior and writer, will be with us in hour two. In an hour three, we'll take you down to the Adcor Defense booth. Had the opportunity to head over there yesterday afternoon after our broadcast and before we had to take off. And we got a chance to catch up with our friend Clint Romache, Staff Sergeant retired of the U.S. Army Medal of Honor recipient. Dr. Jacqueline Kelly of Armed and Heels will join us in hour three. Rob Pincus of the Personal Defense Network. We have the deal of the day. We have the hero of the day. We have the good guy of the day coming up as well in hour three. And we are also taking a look at some of the latest Second Amendment news and information. It's a tale of two headlines over on the Democratic side. If you watch and listen to this program on a regular basis, this will not come as a surprise to you. We've been pointing this out for a couple of weeks now. As Hillary Clinton attacks Bernie Sanders for being not anti-gun enough, what's happening to Bernie Sanders in the polls? Going up or going down? New York Times reporting today, gun control groups say Bernie Sanders is the wrong candidate to support. He's not anti-gun enough. Now, Bernie Sanders, by the way, says, listen, I'm plenty anti-gun. I believe him. But I find it fascinating that this is the narrative that Hillary Clinton is going with, that in order to win, first the Democratic nomination, play to the base, you have to move to the left of the socialist Bernie Sanders on gun control. And so the New York Times reporting today that a, quote, centrist organization and two other groups devoted to gun control are denouncing supporters of Senator Bernie Sanders, who've been arguing that he has a strong record against gun violence. The latest salvo between backers of the Vermont senator and Hillary Clinton on the topic of firearms. The letter from the group Third Way, which was also signed by officials with the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence and Americans for Responsible Solutions, was sent this week to Democracy for America. The liberal grassroots group has endorsed Bernie Sanders. And the officials with these gun control groups say, we, the undersigned, all lead groups have been deeply involved in the cause of gun safety for many years. No, you haven't. No, you haven't. You've been involved in the cause of gun control for many years, but not gun safety. And the fact that you can't call what you do, says everything that you need to know about why your movement fails, because you can't be honest with yourselves, much less the American people. Again, how can you be in favor of gun safety when you don't want to see ranges open up in cities? How can you be in favor of gun safety when you want to make it difficult, if not impossible, for the average American living in a place like New York City or Washington, D.C. or Chicago, Illinois, to get that training and to be able to go to the range on a regular basis in order to become a competent and proficient in their use and handling of firearms? If you don't want Americans to be able to easily access ranges and facilities where they can get educated and trained, you're not in favor of gun safety. You're in favor of gun control. Actually, you're in favor of less gun ownership. Anyway, these groups say that anyone who, quotes, purports to be a progressive on the issue would conclude that Bernie Sanders does not have a strong record against gun violence. First of all, I happen to think, I'm not a member of Third Way or the Brady Campaign or Americans for Responsible Solutions, but I happen to think that, again, gun control and reducing gun violence do not go hand in hand, right? I think it's entirely possible to have a strong record of working to reduce gun violence without promoting any of the ineffective gun control laws that you find in places like Chicago or Baltimore, Maryland, or Washington, D.C. But I don't think those groups really care what I think. So that's the first headline. These gun control groups coming out now, backing Hillary Clinton, bashing Bernie Sanders, seconding what Hillary Clinton has been saying, Bernie's bad on guns. Second headline from YouGov.com. Sanders gains on Clinton nationally. Mm-hmm. The Vermont senator is now seen as electable by a majority of Americans, while Hillary Clinton's lead among likely Democratic voters is narrowed to 9 points. Hillary Clinton's high in this poll was back on, it looks like, about January 10th or so. It's now January 21st. So right about the time Hillary Clinton started proclaiming herself to be the gun control candidate, her popularity took a dip, even among likely Democratic voters. And now Americans are looking at Bernie Sanders and saying, hey, you know, maybe the socialist isn't such a bad guy after all. Again, Americans are not in the mood right now to hear somebody try to proclaim themselves to be the best option when it comes to restricting access to our Second Amendment rights. Americans want to hear from a candidate that respects, that acknowledges. Let's start with acknowledges the right to keep and bear arms. Then we'll get to respects and supports and fights for. But first you have to acknowledge the individual right to keep and bear arms. And when you have Hillary Clinton, who has told fundraisers that she thinks the Supreme Court got it wrong in the Heller case, you've got a candidate who doesn't apparently believe in an individual right to keep and bear arms. Not that the press would ever ask her about that. But again, I find it fascinating. And we've been pointing this out now for, again, a couple weeks, about 11 days or so. That as the anti-gun candidates out there, whether it's Hillary Clinton, we're going to see this in some downstate races too. Many of these candidates are being told, this is what America wants. This is what the electorate wants. No. This is what Michael Bloomberg wants. This is what the gun control groups want. But the American people want to be able to protect themselves. The American people do not feel particularly comfortable or safe right now. Life seems kind of precarious. Everything from the stock market to the U.S. economy. And yes, to our public safety, to our personal safety. Things just seem kind of precarious. And Americans are not clamoring for more ineffective gun control. But many of them are starting to think about their right to keep and bear arms. Not just the right, their right to keep and bear arms. It's one of the reasons why we have seen the shooting, hunting, outdoor trade show grow in popularity and in size, along with the NRA annual meeting coming up in Louisville, Kentucky, in just a couple of months. We've got the Great American Outdoor Show coming up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I think that's going to be pretty packed this year. Because no matter what the anti-gun consultants might say, all you have to do is talk to your friends, talk to your neighbors to understand and to realize how we're feeling as a nation right now and why the calls to promote anti-gun laws under the guise, again, of quote-unquote gun safety are falling flat for so many Americans. We've got more of the day's top stories for you, including a look at the latest legislative news. We've got more anti-gun bills that have been dropped in California. We've got some pro-gun bills passing out of committee in Virginia, which is good news. And over at Town Hall, Matt Vespa has the story from the Hill on federal legislation that's been introduced by Democrats. The Equal Access to Justice for Victims of Gun Violence Act. That is a mouthful. The Hill says it would roll back longstanding protections enjoyed by the gun industry that shields it from any lawsuits. The bill would make firearms manufacturers and dealers liable for harm caused by the weapons that they sell. The legislation being circulated on Capitol Hill could be released later this month. Representative Adam Schiff of California said the Congress passed a unique form of immunity for only one industry, and that's the gun industry. He said, if you're a car maker and your airbags kill someone, you're potentially liable. If you're a pharmaceutical company and sell faulty drugs, you can be held liable. If you're a liquor store and sell alcohol to minors, you can be held liable. Why should it be any different for gun manufacturers? Well, let's see. If you're a pharmaceutical company and you sell faulty drugs, you can be held liable. Well, if you're a firearms manufacturer and you sell a defective product, you absolutely can be held liable. If Representative Schiff doesn't know that, then he hasn't looked at the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. If you're a liquor store owner and you sell alcohol to minors, you can be held liable. Yeah, if you're a gun store owner and you sell a firearm to someone who is not legally allowed to own one, you can be held liable. You've actually broken the law. You're not just being held liable in a civil suit. You've broken the law. That's a crime. So, again, I'm not sure Representative Schiff has read the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, if it matters to him at all what the actual law is. Because, again, if you have to misrepresent the current law in order to try to advance your bill, maybe you've got a crummy bill. Oh, and if you're a car maker and your airbags kill someone, you're potentially liable. What this law says, airbags, by the way, are designed to save lives, right? So that would be a defective product, even in fact caused death or injury. Unless, of course, it was used improperly. Right, you had a young child that wasn't in a car seat, something like that. What they're talking about doing with this bill, the Equal Access to Justice for Victims of Gun Violence Act, is to say that if somebody uses a gun in the commission of a crime, that the manufacturer of that firearm should be held liable for the actions of the individual who committed the violent crime. Now, have you heard of any law that would hold a Ford Motor Company responsible for the actions of a drunk driver? Or I suppose, to continue on here, let's say if we're going to say that the firearms manufacturers should be held liable for the gun that was used in the commission of the crime. Why should Ford Motor Company not be responsible for the getaway car that was used in the commission of a crime? Sounds kind of absurd, doesn't it? Now, the reason why we have the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act is because nobody has tried to sue the airbag industry out of business. Nobody has tried to, well, Hillary's complaining about Big Pharma now, but nobody has tried to say, we can't have drug manufacturers in this country anymore. We have seen a concerted effort going back to the mid-90s to bankrupt the firearms industry through the filing of these types of junk lawsuits. And again, Representative Schiff in California is either unaware or doesn't really care about why this law was passed in the first place and why, by the way, I believe 30 states around the country, maybe more, have similar protections in place. It didn't happen out of the blue. It actually happened in response to something that gun control groups were doing along with anti-gun politicians. This was a legislative response. Representative Schiff is complaining about the bill that passed 10 years ago, and he's not honest about what his legislation does. I don't think this has much of a chance, by the way. I think this is being used as political fodder, which, again, tells you everything you need to know about the state of the modern anti-gun movement. All right, listen, we're going to check in with the modern Second Amendment movement and the SHOT Show 2016, the Shooting, Hunting, Outdoor Trade Show in Las Vegas, Nevada. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, Jared Ogden, a Navy SEAL with Triumph Systems, talking about his hunt with Jana Waller recently. Stick around. We are just getting started here on this Thursday edition of NRA News, Cam and Company.
Speaking with David Helmer with NRA Field Ops. David, talking about Youth Education Summit and application process. First, quickly, what is it, Youth Education Summit?
Youth Education Summit is a week-long leadership week. We bring in 45 to 50 kids from across the country, and for seven really action-packed days, where we learn about the American government, history, and the importance of the Second Amendment.
Okay, who's the typical person who can apply for this?
High school sophomores and juniors can apply, and you need to have at least a 3.0, and you need to be interested in affecting your government and really making a positive difference in your community.
Okay, so when does the application process run, and how do they do it?
We're accepting applications until February 1st, and what it takes is, again, you have to have at least a 3.0 and be a sophomore or junior. Then there's a three-page essay on the Second Amendment, a one-page personal statement where you tell us why you think we should accept you, three letters of recommendation, a page of all your extracurricular activities and awards, and then you also need to include your high school transcript.
Okay, so tell us, who is the typical kid who would apply for this and be part of this program? Give us an idea.
A lot of the kids are shooters. Some are very involved in the military or interested in the military, but it's not a requirement. Mainly it's kids that are leaders amongst their peers and just want to make a positive difference and learn about the government and what they can do to be an active citizen.
So I guess you got to be interested not only in the Second Amendment, but getting involved and making a difference here and getting to know how things work here in
right.
Washington, D.C.
Yeah, they get to see a little more of the political process at work. We spend a day where we go downtown and to the Capitol. We meet a congressman, and we even get to sometimes go into the House and Senate galleries. So they see the political process in work.
How do they get more information about applying?
For more information, you can go to friendsofnra.org/yes, or you can email yes@nrahq.org.
All right. David Helmer, NRA Field Ops. Get those applications in. Thank you for what you do, and thanks for being on NRA News.
Thanks.
I'm here at the NRA World Shooting Championship, and I ran into Michelle and Chris Serino. Hey, guys, welcome back to NRA News. How y'all doing?
Very well, thanks.
We're great, John.
Okay, so I saw you guys here, and Chris, you told me that Michelle is competing also. Michelle, you got into this because of your husband?
Actually, I'm shooting today because my son was unable to come, so I'm shooting, taking his spot. But the whole competitive shooting was because Chris and Colton started shooting. I always went with them, so I just decided to join them.
And what do you think?
This is a great match. It's relaxed, nice people, challenging targets, challenging stages, but I'm having a really great time.
And how are you doing?
Actually, I'm doing really well. This is right up my alley because it's a bunch of different disciplines. So it's fun. There's a lot of heartbreak. There's disappointment because you know you want to be perfect, but it's almost impossible.
There's a lot of out of here because they really are stretching the field with stuff you guys have to do, right?
Oh, exactly. And some of it, like, we haven't done the cowboy action. That's totally going to be new for me. And I like that it evens the playing field out because I don't think not everybody's good at every field, every different discipline.
So what's it like with your husband being who he is, Chris Serino, and you getting into it? Is it ever intimidating or anything? Not from him, but from other folks you're competing against?
You know, everybody's really nice to me, and I shoot with a lot of the really great competitors. They know my limitations, and they're actually very supportive of how I shoot.
Well, that's really cool. And what's it like for you having your wife here shooting? I know we talked to you and your son before, I think at Bianchi, yep. But how about having your wife here?
It's great to have her here because we're together, and I'm gone a lot doing this kind of stuff, you know, with teaching and shooting and doing all this firearms work. She's with me a lot, and it really is nice to have her.
Well, guys, thanks for what you do, both of you, and thanks for being on NRA News.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company, and our coverage of SHOT Show 2016, the Shooting, Hunting, Outdoor Trade Show in Las Vegas, Nevada. Cam Edwards coming to you from just outside of Washington, D.C. today. But I had a fantastic time while I was there in Las Vegas, and I just I want to go back. And I want to welcome to the program Jared Ogden, who is with us from Triumph Systems. Jared, how are you, sir?
I'm doing just fine. How are you?
I am excellent. I appreciate you coming on the program. I know that our friend Jana Waller was supposed to join you, but as sometimes happens at SHOT Show, Jana's voice gave out. Her feet, I believe, are still going strong, but her voice has faded a bit.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. It just means a lot of people are talking to her.
Right, absolutely. Well, I know a lot of people are talking to you as well, and yeah, I want to talk about Triumph Systems, but let's talk about how you got to know Jana, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I got to know Jana after I left the Navy, and we became friends through a mutual friend who's a Navy SEAL colleague of mine, Bo Richenbach. Bo lost both his legs, and we met at a party that Bo and I were both at. He introduced me to Jana, and since then, I mean, both Jana and Jim are like my siblings. They're both great people, and you know, we've been on a bunch of hunts together. Most recently, they took me on my very first bear hunt in Montana, and I went out there, had my tag in the spring, and we were out there for about 7 or 8 days, and I didn't harvest. We had a couple opportunities. But it just didn't work out, so I came back with my same bear tag in the fall, and I got my first bear with Jana. It was truly an amazing opportunity, and it's you know, the other part on that is we're actually billboard sponsors of Jana's show on Sportsman's Channel, Skullbound TV, and I love what I'm doing now with Triumph Systems, and I love the fact that I can incorporate, you know, other people who I love and you know, are great friends like Jana and Jim and their program, and how we're all working together now.
That is awesome. And you're absolutely right. Jana and Jim are just, they're just good people, frankly, Jared. And let's talk about Triumph Systems then. You started this, what, about a year ago?
Yeah, we started about a year ago. So I've been, you know, I left active duty about 4 years ago. I largely stayed within the defense industry for my first 3 years coming out of the Navy. I trained with a lot of law enforcement entities, and I've trained with a lot of civilians. And I was just, you know, really disappointed with what I know is available with what, you know, Tier 1 SOCOM trains with. And then making that transition to the private sector and seeing what is not available to, you know, police officers who are deemed, you know, with a very high mission to protect and serve, as well as, you know, CCW permit holders. That is just such a large, you know, highly growing demographic, and to see, you know, the state required CCW test, you know, we need to make training tools more readily available for people that are CCW permit holders and are law enforcement. And a year ago, I quit my job in defense and I started a consumer products company, and we've got 6 products that we're bringing to market this spring. They're all targets, and they're all based to enhance, you know, the cognitive aspect of training. The cognitive aspect of shooting, because, you know, when you are in a life or death situation and a split second is the difference between going home for dinner or not going home for dinner, you don't have time to think. You have to react. And so the products that we've developed really help, you know, instill instinct into those who carry firearms as a tool to protect themselves and their families.
So how does a target do that, Jared? How does a target help increase your cognitive capabilities?
Well, I'll talk about one SKU in particular. It's
sure.
our Pivotal Trainer. It's not a new concept. It's a turning target. But what we've done with it is we've made it mobile. And we've made it at a price point that you don't have to be rich to afford. The whole thing sets up in 10 minutes, breaks down in 10 minutes. We've got a ballistic plate in front of the motor housing to protect it. If you shoot up the frame, you just go to Home Depot and buy 2x2s and you replace the frame. It's a very mobile, durable target system. And it comes in at $400 MSRP.
Wow.
And that is very obtainable by most people. That's a purchase that guys can make without having to ask their wives, hey, is it okay if I spend this money? Because we all have a slush fund, right?
No comment, Jared. No comment, buddy. My wife might be watching this at home. But you're right. That's not going to break the bank. And certainly, you know, a gun club and even a small range, you know, could easily afford a system like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we made the motor so that it has universal mountability. So business owners can actually mount this to their existing indoor target runners. And, you know, to them it's an upcharge because you can charge a little bit more money for shooters that want to use a system that is dynamic as opposed to just a target runner where you set the distance, maybe you can adjust the light, and then you just shoot a piece of paper.
That is really cool, Jared. All right, so these are all products that are coming out now. Are they all available right now?
Yeah, so we've been, you know, really busting our tail the last 11 months, bringing, you know, really awesome products to market, and everything was for this week. This is our big launch, and we're taking POs starting this week, and we'll be delivering those POs in the spring.
That is fantastic, and we're taking a look at one of the targets right there, right?
If I may, I want to introduce you to one of my friends. He doesn't talk much. He's not being rude, but I'm not sure where the camera's panned. But this is a different SKU. This is the Threat Down Silhouette. It's actually a 100-round target. And for example, if your first round is, say, low in the brain bucket, you're just hitting that one cell. So you're going to get a lot of shots on each of the vital organs. The other thing about this is instant feedback. And instant feedback is a big deal. And when you're hitting a vital organ on our Threat Down series, you know where that round impacts. Now, being a former Navy SEAL, I am absolutely, you know, I wanted to make a terrorist, an ISIS guy. So we've got, you know, an ISIS guy with an S-Vest about ready to clack off. We've got a zombie for all the preppers out there that want to shoot zombies. And we don't want to neglect the hunters. So we also have the Ethical Harvest, which is the same concept, but it's the silhouette of a deer.
That is fantastic.
And really, that Ethical Harvest was partly inspired by Jana because, you know, harvesting and round placement and one shot, one kill in the hunting and conservation arena, that's critical. And all the young hunters growing up, coming up and learning, this is a phenomenal training tool for them so that they can visualize on a range where they need to put that round to take that deer down in one shot.
That is so cool. Where can we find you online? Where can we buy these products?
Absolutely. You can visit us at www.triumph-systems.com. Also, please visit our social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right, I am following you right now, like right this very second.
Awesome.
Boom, just did it, Jared. Listen, thank you so much for coming
cool.
on the program. I hope that we get a chance to catch up with you over the course of the year. I'd love to see how Triumph Systems is doing as you guys are rolling out these products. And, you know, again, thank you for everything that you do and that you've done for this country.
Absolutely, and I look forward to talking again with you. I appreciate it.
You bet. Jared Ogden joined us from Triumph Systems. Here on NRA News, Cam and Company. By the way, if Jared looked a little familiar, you may have seen him on Nat Geo as part of the Ultimate Survival Alaska series.
P. Brownell of Brownells is going to be with us on the program in just a few minutes. Also, Jason Redman of Combat Wounded Coalition coming up at the top of the hour. We are also, again, following more of the day's top stories for you. John Fund has a piece. It's a National Review. We've talked about this week, you know, El Chapo with his 50 caliber rifle that was found, that was sold as part of Operation Fast and Furious. Well, John Fund, this was actually an older story here. I'm glad that I noticed the timestamp on that. I don't know where this why this story was popping up today, but a reminder, I suppose, that back in 2015, in August of 2015, we learned that one of the terrorists who tried to shoot up the Draw Muhammad contest in Texas also was equipped with a firearm that had been sold during Operation Fast and Furious. And now we've got a federal judge who this week told President Obama, no, your claims of executive privilege in withholding these Fast and Furious documents from Congress that have been subpoenaed don't hold water. And remember the reasoning that the judge gave. The judge, by the way, is an Obama appointee, Judge Amy Berman Jackson. And the judge said, yes, executive privilege exists, and there may be some communications that you withheld that would actually fall under executive privilege, but you've already released a lot of information about Operation Fast and Furious, including the Office of Inspector General's report. There is no reason for you to simply deny to Congress information that is a subject of inquiry where you've already provided so much information. Now, it's widely expected that the administration is going to appeal this decision, trying to keep the release of that information out of the public eye for as long as possible. You've also had Senator Chuck Grassley, say this week that he believes that some of those communications that have been withheld may show that Eric Holder knew more than he acknowledged in his public testimony before Congress. Again, we don't know because we don't know what's in the communications, but remember, Congress was denied access to thousands of documents. And even when the Obama administration partially capitulated and ended up releasing several thousand emails, they did not release all of them. Not even all of the emails that have been under subpoena. Some of them were released, but the executive branch held back more. And now, again, a federal judge saying that the administration simply can't do that. So we'll keep our eyes on any possible appeal by the administration that might be coming in the next few weeks. The Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, also asking for more money for the ATF. She was talking during a Senate Appropriations Subcommittee hearing. And by the way, I think this was the same subcommittee hearing where we had a sitting senator say that she didn't want to talk about the constitutional issues surrounding these executive actions. That's not what they're there to talk about, right? I better not say. I'll have to just find the actual quote here. Loretta Lynch said that the toughened restrictions were a lawful and, quote, common sense response to what she called a, quote, epidemic of gun violence in the United States. Democrats on the committee, the New York Times says, rallied to her defense in supporting the measures. New York Times says one of the key pieces of the president's plan would, quote, clarify what it means to be a licensed gun dealer, and lays out a series of conditions and scenarios that could subject someone to background checks before being able to sell guns. By the way, if you're presenting hypotheticals and saying, well, this could mean that you're a gun dealer, but it could also mean that you're not, how's that providing clarity? I just out of curiosity, is that not actually introducing more confusion? Because there is language in the statute right now. There's already a definition of who is engaged in the business. And it doesn't mention anything about having a website or using a business card or selling guns in original packaging. Yeah, honest to goodness, selling guns in the original packaging. Senator Richard Shelby said that he had occasionally sold a gun to a friend or associate and that he worried that the new policy could qualify him as a dealer. He said that the president's plan, which he said had been carried out through executive fiat, could deter him and others from buying or selling even a small number of firearms as a result. The Times says several conservative lawyers addressing the panel agreed with Senator Shelby. Said that the president was overstepping his executive authority. One witness, Luther Strange, the attorney general in Alabama, said that some elements of his plan were a, quote, unwarranted assault on the Second Amendment and that they would do little to reduce gun crime. You don't have to, by the way, find a Republican to say that. There are plenty of Democrats who will acknowledge that this president's executive actions really won't do anything to reduce violent crime. The Times also quotes Mark Barden, a Connecticut father whose first grade son was murdered at Sandy Hook Elementary. And he said, shamefully, Congress has done nothing to address this epidemic of active shooters. He says, President Obama is trying to do something. Please help him. If you, again, if the president himself has acknowledged that these efforts, and in fact, even the efforts that the president has called for legislatively, not just the executive actions, would not have prevented these crimes. The argument of, well, at least he's doing something, is not one that resonates, it seems, with a lot of Americans. When you look at doing something versus doing something effectively, we talked with Steve Holbrook on the program yesterday. If you actually want to reduce gun violence, then that's the aim. It's not about reducing gun ownership, unless you think that the only way to reduce gun violence is to reduce gun ownership, which hasn't been the case in this country for two decades now, where we've had more guns sold and fewer crimes. So reducing gun violence, I don't think anyway, is tied to reducing gun ownership among the American people. I don't think reducing gun violence is achieved by making it more difficult for the average American to exercise their right to keep and bear arms, or by making it confusing as to whether or not you are a gun dealer or not if you sell two or three firearms and you own a business card. By the way, does a business card have to say anything about firearms on it, or is it just your business card? You hand it to somebody, here, give me a call. Does that count? I mean, again, this isn't providing clarity. And this isn't going after the people who are committing violent crimes. It's not even going after the people who are selling guns illegally. You know, as we talked about on the program this week, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin last year, you had an individual, 54 counts, 27 counts of buying a firearm illegally, 27 counts of selling a firearm illegally. Each one of those charges, punishable by 10 years in prison. Now, I don't think you're going to get 540 years in prison for this crime. But he didn't get even 10 years. He didn't get a year. He got probation. And the U.S. Attorney's Office agreed to this sentence. They didn't fight for more. They didn't say, Your Honor, we are doing everything that we can to send a message that this type of activity won't be tolerated. Nope. Said, okay, probation, that's fine. Enforcing the laws on the books against the most violent criminals, against the most egregious offenders, as opposed to the little guy who may have sold one firearm too many for Attorney General Loretta Lynch's liking, is not going to make us a safer society. And I think, again, more and more Americans are coming to this conclusion here. All right, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, Pete Brownell of Brownells is going to join us. This is such a cool story. Brownells and the Special Operations Wounded Warrior Fund are partnering up, and they are raffling off a rifle from Axelson Tactical. It is a Matt Axe Axelson tribute rifle. And we'll talk about it with Pete Brownell right after this quick timeout here on NRA News, Cam and Company.
I'm here with Don Always from Double Star. And Don, above us, it is raining cats and dogs, but we are safe here inside. We snuck into the vendor building here to see some of our good friends, and it's good to have you back on NRA News. How you been?
Well, it's good to see you again. And it is nice to be inside dry.
There's no roof leaks over us, so let's go. All right, we've got some really neat stuff here. We've rolled out the red carpet for the Double Star products. So tell us what you got here. We got a couple handguns and a couple of long guns to look at. What do we got?
We do. We've got, first of all, let me show you our C2. Our C2 is our compact version. It's a 4 1/4 inch slide and barrel. Basically, this gun, we're making the frames, use a Caspian slide, Storm Lake barrel, Wilson internal parts. There's no MEMD parts anywhere in the gun. And it's finished off with an ion bond finish. And we also, on this particular one, we've got the bobbed stock on this, the grip, and it makes a significant difference if you've got a big fat hand like I do. So it's not one of those things that's just aesthetics. It's pleasing to the touch.
Well, and fit's important. With a firearm, I've had folks who tell me that a different firearm may fit a hand different, and it is important in how you're going to shoot and your confidence that that firearm fits you well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of subjectivity to whether we think a weapon fits us or not. And it's not all subjective. I mean, it actually affects the angle of the axis of the bore in your hand. So different people will find that much to their liking. We also have our C2S, which is our short version. So this version is, again, compact, although it uses a full-size magazine. But this is 3 1/2 inch barrel. Now, on the longer one, we keep a conventional bushing. This, however, has a non-conventional bushing system. But they're both Series 70, as in there are no firing pin block safeties. So this is very much along the lines of what the Marine Corps and other agencies spec in terms of their trigger system. So it goes back to the Series 70 style.
Caliber?
45, although we're also making them in 10mm, and you're going to see a 9mm version floating around pretty soon, too.
So I'm assuming that one right there is probably a pretty good carry choice for a carry.
For those of us who are dyed-in-the-wool 1911 fans, yes, exactly.
All right, Don, so what else do we have here?
Well, this is our 9mm. You can buy it either from us as a kit or an upper and a conversion kit, or you can buy it as the entire rifle. What we've got here is the short barrel rifle version. Now, some people are going to say, what's the point of a 5-pound 9mm? Well, I'm going to tell you, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. If you've forgotten how much fun the MP5 was, pick this up. You can shoot it. It's not extremely loud. I'm not saying that it's a fits in a tactical niche, but it sure fits in a fun niche. And given the cost of 9mm ammo, it'll put a grin on your face.
Well, we're saying that, Don. You know, it's one of those things about the shooting sports. We're all here, you know, and it's good for home protection and lots of other things. But shooting firearms is fun. You know, obviously we do it safely and properly, but it's still a lot of fun. That's why we got into this.
Absolutely. There's nothing to say that something that has a lot of benefits can't also be fun.
I'm talking with Don Always from Double Star. All right, Don, before we get out of here, you got something else to show you. What else do we have here?
Well, our C3 rifle, our constant carry carbine, has been extremely popular. It's 5 1/2 pounds without using any carbon fiber or plastic. So it retains all of the durability and reliability of a standard AR. That's been really popular. Well, this year we've got out what we call our C4. It's our constant carry carbine compact.
Oh, wow.
It's this one. Now, of course, it's an SBR, so in states that allow you to get the federal tax stamp, this is the 7 1/2 inch version. This, again, all standard components inside, but because we were able to reduce the weight with a pencil barrel, a fixed stock, this weighs 5.0 pounds with an empty magazine in it. And although you sacrifice some ballistics when you cut the barrel back this far, it gives you an extremely lightweight package that's a lot of fun to shoot. It's a little loud, but a good compromise is to let us build you one in about a 10 1/2 to 11 1/2 inch range. Great ballistics, great handling, lots of fun to shoot, and this does fill a tactical niche.
How can folks get more information about Double Star?
Go to star15.com.
Star15.com.
Star15.com. We offer excellent quality at a good price. So we're certainly not the cheapest out there, and that's never going to be the niche we feel. We're not the most expensive, but you're going to not pay a whole lot of money, but you're still going to get a lot of quality.
Don, always double star. Always good to see you. I'm sorry, I couldn't help it, Don.
Couldn't help it.
Good to see you, and thanks for being on NRA News.
Until next time.
Thanks so much for being a part of this edition of NRA News, Cam and Company. Coming to you from SHOT Show 2016, the Shooting Hunting Outdoor Trade Show, and also coming to you from the Mothership in Washington, D.C. Taking a look at the AdCor Defense booth, our on-location sponsor this year, and we want to thank AdCor for that. Also want to head back to Las Vegas and talk to the folks on set right now. I believe we have Mr. Pete Brownell of Brownells joining us. And as we pan over, I think we have perhaps one more guest joining Pete
Surprise.
Brownell. The big reveal. Chris Cox, the executive director of NRA's Institute for Legislative Action, is with us as well. Gentlemen, how are you this afternoon?
Doing great, Cam. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thank you, Cam.
It is my pleasure. I was really excited, Pete, when I found out what we're going to be talking about this afternoon. I have had the opportunity to meet Jeff Axelson. I've actually met Matt Axelson's dad, Corky. And they're such a great family. It's a great family business. And so Brownells and the Special Operations of Wounded Warrior Fund, you all are partnering up to raffle one of these Axelson tactical rifles, a tribute rifle to Matt Axelson, right?
That's right. Yeah, so for those people who are not necessarily familiar with that name out there who are listening and watching, Lone Survivor, Marcus Luttrell's movie and his tragic story, he had a team of SEALs with him. And Matt Axelson was one of those team members, they're all great team members out there helping doing their duties. And this is a tribute from his family. The Axelson Tactical made a civilian model of that rifle that Matt was carrying on that mission. So it's the perfect model for it. It's a great collector's item. It's AX-01 out of 99. 98 of them are sold. It's the only one left. It's a raffle. You can buy these tickets at brownells.com/axe rifle. That's AXE rifle, RIFLE. And they're $50, and all the proceeds, 100% of it goes right to this Special Operator Wounded Warrior Program, which is really a program to help these soldiers when they come back that have some injury, mental, physical, to really start to integrate back into their families, into their lifestyles. And, you know, they come out of a team focus, and that team is now back stateside to help them get back in, and it helps integrate them back in and put them back with their loved ones in places that they love to go hunt and shoot, and places they go fish and all those things with the people they love doing it. So it's a great program. It's off to a great start. I'd encourage everybody out there to support their soldiers. This is one way to do it. It also, Marcus Luttrell is part of it with his ammo program, Never Quit, and he's a absolute phenomenal recruiter and representative of good teams out there. So it's a great program to be involved in, and we're proud to be part of it.
So if folks just go to Brownells, we can find the raffle there, Pete?
Yes, you can. You can buy tickets right now, $50. This thing is going to be going until, July 7th? We'll be at the NRA show selling tickets as well. So it's going to be a couple months long program. So please support your soldiers, there's one way to do it.
That is
fantastic. brownells.com/axe rifle. Yeah.
And you know, Chris, I want to ask you a question here, because we certainly have seen a lot of media and anti-gun politicians talk about the extreme gun lobby in this country as if it is a small band of yahoos out there just trying to tear down the Constitution. What we're talking about, again, is an industry that's made up of people, you know, everyone from a Pete Brownell to a Jeff Axelson, and tens of thousands of Americans in between, a lot of them who have served this country, who have fought for this country, who have sacrificed and lost a lot for this country, and yet they are defending our right to keep and bear arms. They're not out there saying that we need to take it away. They're out there fighting for this right every day.
Well, Cam, I know you were out here, and for your viewers and listeners who have been to SHOT Show, you know that it's fun to walk around and see all the new products, see all the cool stuff. But I just came, before I came up here with Pete, I just came from another presentation that America's First Freedom was involved in, where another American hero named J.R. Salzman was presented a rifle he was injured in Iraq. He lost his arm, lost a couple of fingers. He reached out to some manufacturers, wanted to buy a tweaked rifle that would work for him. And, of course, people like Pete Brownell in this industry and great heroes in this industry, they don't charge these American heroes for these sorts of things. And I say that only because this is a family that gives back. What the Brownells are doing through their program, what other industry partners are doing, to say thank you to the people who put their lives on the line to defend our freedoms. Our job in the political and legislative arena is really to do a job saying thank you for those who put their lives on the line. All of us have a responsibility as Americans not only to participate, but to thank all these American heroes and to see, again, our friend Pete Brownell and his family and his community and his business reach out and do something like this. It really is indicative of a larger family environment that I really wish that we could just bottle up and capture and put out on the campaign trail as we try to take back this country.
I think we got to spread the word and I want to acknowledge too, because NRA ILA, you all do a lot of work that you don't toot your own horn about this, because it's not about tooting your own horn. It's about helping these veterans. There's a group, the Duskin and Stevens Foundation, down in North Carolina, and every year, the past couple of years, I've gone down to their beef and beer benefit, and every year there's an NRA ILA banner, and you folks are helping out this foundation. And again, it's the Special Forces community, it's these wounded warriors and their families, those who have lost their lives. And you guys aren't out there, you know, talking about what you're doing, but I think it should be acknowledged that that is, I think, something that is very near and dear to the men and women who are a part of NRA ILA, from what I've seen anyway.
Well, and I know, I can speak for Pete on this. I don't speak for Pete ever, but I know I can speak for Pete on this. We have the opportunity, working for the National Rifle Association and representing our members across the country, to meet some amazing people and to meet some quote unquote political leaders and some quote unquote celebrities. But I have to tell you, and I know I'm speaking for Pete on this, that our greatest honor is to get to meet these American heroes who put their lives on the line to defend our freedom at home and abroad. And that's the greatest honor. The most exciting time I've had was being down there with J.R. Salzman and seeing some of these military heroes. And when we can give back, we don't do it for credit. We don't do it for attention. We do it because it's the right thing to do. And that's what the NRA is ultimately all about. I mean, all of our programs, our children's safety programs, we've put 29 million kids through a gun avoidance program, not for credit or not for attention, but because it needs to be done. And the gun control groups don't do that. Barack Obama's not doing that. The politicians aren't doing that. It's the men and women of the National Rifle Association. The same goes for our 100,000 instructors that are teaching safe and responsible gun ownership all across the country. The politicians and the anti-gunners aren't doing that. It's the men and women of the National Rifle Association. And so when we can give back, when we can do something that's good for the community and ultimately good for the country by thanking these American heroes, we do it, and we do it without apology, and we're proud. We're proud to play a small role in all of that.
That's exactly how I would have said that, so thanks for the words.
Thank you.
By the way, you guys look fantastic. You guys look like you could be hosting Monday Night Football with the headsets there.
There we are.
Side by side.
I won't be Costa, don't worry.
Oh, you'd be so much better than Bob Costas. We've only got a couple of minutes
left. It'd be the politically incorrect version of Monday Night Football, I promise you that.
The ratings would go up, I guarantee you that as well.
I would think so.
You know, we are now just a couple of weeks away from the Iowa caucus. The New Hampshire primaries are less than a month away. We are in the thick of the election season, and Chris and Pete, this is the most critical election of our lifetimes. I mean, we say this every time around, but you just look at the stakes here, even on just the Supreme Court, much less the executive actions. What is your message for gun owners right now throughout the election year?
Right. So, you know, as an industry, as gun owners out there, this is one that's going to be that's going to sting a lot for a long time, if not my whole life. If we lose or lose the chance to put the right legislators in place and the right justices in place, this is one that, when you think about it, if we have another appointees like the last two, we're going to be losing every Second Amendment challenge from here on out at the legislative level, not just at the Supreme Court, which is the big loser, but every other appointment. So these are going to be important ones. If there's one thing to vote on, take your Second Amendment vote, take your gun vote, go to the poll and get out there and do it. I would also encourage everybody that's in the industry that this is something to start to rally around, and this is the one that's going to count. We've said it many times before, but quite frankly, what's at risk? We can't afford another Clinton in the White House. We know when we pulled back before and said, well, we'll be able to muscle through an Obama, how's that working out? It's not working out great. So for America, and if we allow Clinton to get in, it's going to be really, really tough, and we have a lot at risk.
Well, Pete's exactly right, and he touched on a lot of issues that are important, not only the fact that the industry needs to get involved and make sure that we're all working together, both as consumers and as manufacturers, to get this message out and to make sure that the fear and the anger and the frustration that Americans have right now with regards to this political system doesn't turn into apathy, doesn't result in people sitting on the sidelines. No one can sit out this election. Truly, the Second Amendment is on the ballot in November, and what we do between now and Election Day, first Tuesday, November this year, is going to determine what type of country we live in moving forward. So this is not a an exercise in anything other than pure survival, as Pete and I talked about earlier today. And what we do between now and Election Day is going to determine, again, whether or not we secure these American freedoms for our kids and our grandkids. And it's not just an opportunity. It really is our responsibility. And I can tell you, the National Rifle Association is going to work tirelessly every day to make sure that happens.
Chris Cox, Pete Brownell, thank you both so much. I look forward to talking again very soon. Hour 2 of NRA News Cam and Company is coming up next.
I'm here at the NRA World Shooting Championship at Peacemaker National Training Center in beautiful West Virginia with Cole McCullough. Cole, should I call you the overlord of Peacemaker? This is your place. It's beautiful. And you are so busy with this competition, but I want to grab you for a few minutes. Sure. Tell folks, Cole, who don't know, what is the Peacemaker National Training Center?
The Peacemaker National Training Center is one of the world's largest shooting sports complexes, and here we do a number of different things. We hold a lot of different shooting competitions, a number of different training events, and geared towards small and large events, but it is really for the responsible gun owning citizen as a primary objective for us. And we do everything from trap shooting to long range rifle shooting to speed handgun shooting and virtually every different type of shooting competition there is.
And that's a good place for us to start, Cole. Lots of different ranges. Just give us an overview here. We got a couple minutes of all you have, the different ranges. We're just driving around, and it is just an amazing facility. But what do you got going on here?
Well, right now today we have the NRA World Shooting Championship, which is presented by Magpul, which is actually one of the neatest things around. The objective is to be able to crown the world's greatest shooter. And so we provide all the firearms and all of the different stages of fire, and we test the shooters on an even platform in a commonly weighted stage scenario. So they've got to shoot every particular discipline, and you've got to do it equally well if you're going to win. And if you are, you're the greatest shooter in the world, and it's kind of hard to argue with whoever that's going to be.
And this is just one of the many events. Give us an idea of some of the other events you host here year-round.
Sure. We do the FNH World, the FNH three-gun World Shooting Championship there as well. It's a three-gun shoot. We do the Armalite, which is a two-gun championship. We hold. We have a number of different movie and events and productions that come in from AMC and History Channel and a number of those other types of things. One of the other good things that we do is a lot of different training programs. For example, one of the neat training programs that we're doing through the NRA Outdoors program is what's called the NRA Practical Hunting and Rifleman School. So Weatherby supplies all the rifles, Hornady provides the ammo, Swarovski provides the optics, and shooters come in, students come in for a two-day period, and we teach them how to be better riflemen and riflewomen from 50 to 600 yards so that when they do go out west, they're completely prepared as riflemen to be able to take that shot that's going to come down to 20 or 30 seconds and ethically take animals and do that under the NRA banner and logo, and we teach that along with a number of other different types of things. But we have a lot of training, a lot of different competitions, and a lot of recreational fun stuff going on.
Speaking with Cole McCullough with Peacemaker National Training Center. And Cole, what I was struck by while we were riding around here was just the variety. Give me an idea. You guys have long ranges, short ranges, shotgun. Give us the laundry list of the different ranges you have here.
Sure. So we've got one of the neat parts is we've got a traditional bullseye range, which is from 50 to 300 yards with a rifle and also a 25-yard straight-ahead pistol range. And people, if you're not a member, we have a member and a non-member component. So if you're not a member, you can come in for $20 a day and just shoot up there all you want. And so that's a nice thing. We did not want to make this an overly exclusive environment. So, you know, our thought was, where's the next Sergeant York going to come from? Where are we going to be able to have the next people come in and learn what it's like to be on a, you know, in a proper gun range and be able to learn our culture and our ways of safety and responsibility? So we've got that range. We've also got a sporting clays component to that with five stand and wobble trap and that sort of thing. We've also got a number of different 10 different action pistol ranges and a 1,000-yard rifle range, which is electronic.
Cole, how can people get more information about Peacemaker?
Well, you can go to peacemakernational.com, and you'll be able to see all the different things that we have. We also have a Facebook and a Twitter account, so you can look us up there.
Cool. And, Cole, in the last few seconds we have here, why should people get out here and check out Peacemaker?
If you're a Second Amendment supporter, you want to learn how to shoot, improve your overall skills and be a better, more responsible gun owner, this is the place for you.
Cole McCullough with Peacemaker, thanks for what you do every day, and thanks for being on NRA News.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Welcome back. Hour two of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, starts right now. Our coverage of SHOT Show 2016, thanks to our on-location sponsor, Adcore Defense. And coming up on the program this hour, Richard Grinnell of Fox News, Katie Pavlich of Town Hall, J.R. Salzman. You heard Chris Cox talk about the presentation that America's First Freedom magazine had with J.R. Salzman, presenting J.R. with a rifle, and there's a really cool backstory to go along with this, and we're going to let J.R. tell that story later in the hour. Right now, I want to welcome to the program Jason Redman from Combat Wounded Coalition, and, you know, obviously we've had Jason on the program as well talking about his book. Jason, how are you, sir?
I am awesome. I mean, obviously, I'm out here at SHOT Show. You're in Vegas. You're with just amazing patriots who love this country, the Second Amendment. They love freedom. And you know me, that's all the things that I stand for.
Absolutely. And so you are out there. You're not just seeing the sights. I mean, you've got a product that you are showing off at SHOT Show this year, right?
That's right. We are pretty excited. So I have partnered with Miltac Knife and Tool Company. They are a great company based out of Texas. And they've been a huge supporter of Wounded Warriors, Special Operations Wounded Warrior, and they support us, Combat Wounded Coalition and Wounded Wear. And, you know, we just started talking, and I have always been a huge fan of edged weapons, of knives. And Craig Sword, the head of Miltac, said, "Hey, Jay, what do you think about making a knife for yourself, the Jason Redman Overcome Knife?" And that was probably about 6 months ago, and it led to this amazing product right here, which this is the first prototype. This is the unveiling today. But this knife captures my life. And it was based off the idea you've got the Tanto blades, which carries us back to the original samurai, you know, that warrior spirit. This knife is also similar, many aspects of it, to what I carried when I was wounded. It is designed for, you can use it with fighting, you know, the fighting pommel, single tang, single piece of metal, so great strength, great versatility. It can be a good fighting knife. It can be a good field knife. And the red and black actually represents the aspects of my life. Those who have read my book, The Forging and Reforging, know that the forging part was when I was a young, new leader, made some mistakes, almost ended my career, and had to dig myself out of that hole. So the black paracord represents that that period, the original forging. Of course, the red represents the blood I shed on the battlefield and the blood that so many other warriors have shed. And so that is the forging and reforging, of course, having the JR Overcome logo on it. So this knife is for anybody that has that mindset that I can overcome adversity. I tell you, working with Miltac a couple of years ago, I did a hog hunt. I used one of their knives, very similar to this, and I took down I got a boar. Anybody that's never done that before, hunting wild boar with dogs and knives, it was amazing. But their knife, it did the trick. It was fast. It was efficient. And that boar was down quickly.
That is awesome. Our friend Ron Bellin invited me, actually, to go on a hog hunt that way. And, unfortunately, I had to pass up the opportunity, but I hope to go at some point because it sounded like no hunt that I've ever heard of before, Jason. I mean, it sounded like you are really getting back to, I mean, you're getting awfully primal when you're hunting hogs with knives and dogs.
You are, and you just get caught up in the energy. I'll be honest, it's one of the few things, maybe next to skydiving, that brings back that adrenaline rush that you would get when you were in combat before you would go into a building or before you were taking something down. I mean, the dogs start, you know, they catch scent of that boar, they go after it, and you're just running through the woods trying to go after these boars. The dogs try and pin it, and you go in with the knife. So all of this coming back together with the idea of creating that Overcome knife, you know, for a guy like me who got severely wounded, got put back together. You know, all of you know my motto, my mantra is overcome. It is what that's what I talk about. So pretty neat to work with Miltac and come full circle and now have this knife.
That is awesome. And again, I mean, it just speaks to the relationship that
You know, companies within this industry have developed with organizations like Special Operations, Wounded Warriors, or the Combat Wounded Coalition. In fact, I want to ask you about another sort of a synergistic endeavor here, Brotherhood Munitions, right? I mean, this is also a company that is giving back to our military community.
That's right. We just partnered with Brotherhood Munitions. Myself and Debbie Lee, who, you know, affectionately known within the SEAL teams as Mama Lee. Mark Lee was her son. They actually just did a great episode on the History Channel called Live to Tell about Mark's life and what he did. He was serving with Chris Kyle in Ramadi when Mark was taken down and the first SEAL killed in Iraq. So Debbie Lee started America's Mighty Warriors, and myself, Combat Wounded Coalition, and America's Mighty Warriors are working with Brotherhood Munitions. We are producing a high-end training ammunition. A lot of times, some of the training ammunition degrades a little bit in quality compared to the higher-end stuff. They want to produce something that is amazingly effective, that you're going to get consistent, you're going to get consistent accuracy with this ammo as you're training. On top of that, you know it is going back to a good cause. 10% of the proceeds from the ammunition sales go back, 5% to the Combat Wounded Coalition, 5% to America's Mighty Warriors. So we're pretty excited about this. We are going to be at the NRA show in Louisville, Kentucky in May, and we're actually going to have it ready to go. So we've got some amazing opportunities out there with some of these companies who understand and believe in the sacrifice that built this country.
Absolutely. And I mean, again, you know, those individuals, I think, are present throughout the industry, both those, you know, who have served and those who have not. I think that there is a great appreciation and an acknowledgement of the sacrifices that the men and women of our military make throughout this industry. And you see it there at SHOT. I mean, you just have to walk down an aisle and you'll see that that appreciation and that devotion, I think, on display.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, SHOT Show is such an amazing place where you just get all these people. I mean, you see the who's who of military, law enforcement, individuals that come from all across this country just because they're passionate about hunting. They're passionate about, obviously, the jobs they do, whether it's, you know, the tremendous burden that our law enforcement officials carry, whether it's our military that are out there. I mean, so much of these stands around this show was equipment that I carried when I was on active duty. And it really is a neat experience, and it's pretty neat to be able to go to these companies and say, hi, this is who I am. I'm a wounded warrior. I'm trying to support other wounded warriors. And you know, with open arms, they're like, how can we help?
You know, I want to go back to the word overcome, Jason, and that mantra that you have, that ethos that you have, because, you know, it strikes me that attitude is 180 degrees away from the attitude of, why did this happen to me, right? I didn't deserve this. How do I get through this? I'm a victim. And we live, I think, in a culture that in many ways celebrates a victimhood. You know, we want people to acknowledge that they are victims and that maybe things are either owed to them or things aren't their fault. It's not their responsibility. How does that overcome ethos play out in our society today? And do we have a lack of that attitude in our society today?
Unequivocally, I believe that we totally have a lack of that ethos, which is, it's sad. It's frustrating to me to see, because the foundations of our nation was built on the overcome spirit. You know, you had these people that came over. They wanted to escape the persecution when they were in Britain, and they came to this country looking for freedom and opportunity. And they didn't show up, and nobody handed them a thing. It was through tremendous hard work and sacrifice that they built the lands, the farms, the businesses here in the United States of America. And it was that overcome spirit, that overcome mindset that made America what it is. And it's troubling me to see that, I don't know at what point in the last 20, 30, 50 years that you're starting to get this change of people who feel like they deserve a handout, that they'll come up with any excuse out there to say, hey, I'm a victim, and I hate to see it. So I am a one-man army that is driving people to get out there and understand your future starts and stops with you. the one thing that's stopping you from overcoming and finding greatness and success is you. That's it. You know, you just got to accept the fact that things aren't always going to go right. Guess what? Life's not fair. But if you sit back and cry and whine about it, you're never going to move forward. You're only going to move back. You got to step up, brace into the storm, and drive forward and overcome. And that is the essence. That is what I speak about to companies, businesses, sports team. The overcome mindset is the key to everything. You can be a great leader. You can be a great member of a team. You can have all the money in the world. If you do not have that overcome mindset, when things go wrong, ultimately you will fail. And that is the one essential thing that you need to find success.
Talking again with Jason Redman, the book, The Trident, The Forging and Reforging. I mean, Navy SEAL leader. We've been talking about the new knife that is available. I've got to ask you as well, Jason, before we run out of time here, tell me about your ride to Sturgis.
So it is the third year we've done this for, you know, a lot of members of the military community. A lot of our patriots are big motorcycle riders. I myself am. I love my 2010 Street Glide. And we partnered with the Buffalo Chip, the legendary Buffalo Chip out in Sturgis, South Dakota. And they created the Freedom Celebration Ride. So we actually start in Spearfish, which is about 30 minutes from Sturgis. And it's a huge celebration. We have all these veterans. We bring in wounded warriors. And we go on this beautiful ride. We finish up with a lunch. But it's all about fundraising. It's all about recognizing the sacrifice of these warriors. And then we close the night right there on the stage at the Buffalo Chip with the Bob Hansen Award. And Bob Hansen was a World War II veteran with Cavalry. He was a POW. He is now, I think, about 94 years old. He's an amazing guy. He's a spitfire, but he is the icon of the overcome spirit of this patriotism of our military, that greatest generation. And we've created the Bob Hansen Award. And I'm honored to have been one of the first recipients of that award. And then right there on the stage at the Buffalo Chip, we present other military members or individuals who have truly made a difference to give back with the Bob Hansen Award. So we're starting to look at who the new awardees are going to be this year. So if you're going to be out in Sturgis, go on the Buffalo Chips website, look up the Freedom Celebration Ride, sign up. I'd love to ride with you. I'd love to meet you. And you're giving back to a great cause. You'll meet some of our nation's heroes, including Bob Hansen.
That sounds amazing, Jason. So I've got to ask, for those who aren't riders but maybe in the area, can they show up for the event, to see the award being presented and some of the other activities that you have going on throughout the day there?
Absolutely. They don't have to ride. They can show up in downtown Spearfish for the start of the ride, and that's the actual Freedom Celebration part. We have bands. We have speakers. I speak, other speakers. And then we launch the ride, and they can meet everybody back at the Buffalo Chip itself for the lunch. And then that evening is when we present the awards from stage.
That sounds very cool. I'm looking again at BuffaloChip.com right now. August 11th of this year, that's when the Freedom Celebration Ride will be taking place. Jason, it is always good to have you on the show. I cannot thank you enough for everything that you've done, everything that you continue to do for us as a nation and us as Americans. I hope that we get a chance to talk again very soon.
I'm sure we will. Thank you guys for having me on again. For everybody out there, you know, be well, drive that overcome spirit. It's not too late to make America great again. Let's do it.
Jason Redman with us from the Combat Wounded Coalition here on NRA News Cam and Company covering SHOT Show 2016 in Las Vegas, Nevada. Richard Grinnell from Fox News, Katie Pavlich from Town Hall will join us later on in the hour. And as I mentioned, J.R. Salzman, a wounded warrior who had a rifle presented to him by the folks at America's First Freedom earlier today, cannot wait to talk with JR so he can tell you the backstory here. Coming up at the top of hour three, we're going to head down to the Ad Corps defense booth. I had the opportunity to spend some time with Medal of Honor recipient Clinton Romache yesterday. Also, Dr. Jacqueline Kelly of Armed and Heals. Rob Pincus of the Personal Defense Network will join us on the program. And we will get to a deal of the day, a hero of the day, and a good guy of the day as well. We've got more of the day's top Second Amendment stories that we're going to be covering as well, so stick around. We've got a very busy rest of NRA News Cam and Company. We've got more from SHOT Show 2016 coming up right after this quick timeout.
I'm speaking with Jim Sapieka, director of the NRA Museums. Jim, there's three museums. Let's talk about that third museum you guys have way out west.
That third museum is kind of a little hidden jewel box. It doesn't get the press that the other two bigger museums get, but it's a spectacular little display case. It's the Frank Brownell Museum of the Southwest, and it's at the NRA Whittington Center in Raton, New Mexico. Now, folks who are really shooters will know what the Whittington Center is, but those who may not be that active, it's a spectacular range and hunting complex that is owned and operated by the NRA. There are tens of thousands of acres out there with spectacular ranges where a lot of different championship matches are shot in addition to general recreational and sporting shooting. But they also have the Brownell Museum of the Southwest, and they have some great guns there. Of course, that history of that area is just spectacular, going back to the conquistadors. And they follow the evolution of firearms in that area throughout that multiple century span. They also have firearms that are used in the types of competitions that take place at the Whittington Center. And they recently got a spectacular group of modern engraved firearms. There are masterworks there that I have never seen the likes of before. So if you're in that area, and it's a great area for vacationing, there's a lot of attractions in that area, be sure you don't miss this little jewel box of a museum there.
And how do you get to see all the museums online?
Well, you can. We have several social media platforms. We've got, of course, the website, nramuseums.com. And, of course, we have our Facebook page. You can friend us there and get our Gun of the Day posts. So you can visit us on the Internet, Facebook, get the books. And for sure, come by and see the three museums. They're all open every day of the week, and admission is always free.
What kind of government cares more about appeasing Islamic terrorists than defending the constitutional rights of its citizens? A government that would disarm us during the age of terror. Nothing would make us more vulnerable to generations of suffering and slaughter than the destruction of our Second Amendment. But many of our politicians, aided by a relentless media, are launching that attack themselves. They dream of joining the rest of the disarmed peoples of the world, entrusting our survival to the mercy of monsters. The greatest damage the terrorists could ever inflict upon us is disarmament at the hands of the political elites. But we will never offer our right to survive as a fool's ransom to the world's killers. Our freedom is what they fear most. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
I know you're watching, so pay attention. You hate my freedom, my religion, and my country. You hate me for speaking my mind. You try to control me with violence and intimidation. You think you can muzzle me with fear? Don't ever confuse me for my politicians or my media. I am an American, free-born and free-bred. And I will call you out for who you are. An Islamic extremist who would kill me for my beliefs. You don't intimidate me. My freedom is more powerful than anything you can possibly do. And I will never, never surrender my rights to your terror. I will say what I think, worship according to my beliefs, and raise my children how I see fit. And I defend it all with the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. I cower to no one, because I am the National Rifle Association of America, and I am freedom's safest place.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company. Our coverage of SHOT Show 2016 continues. We'll be talking with the good folks at Nosler, I believe, on tomorrow's program. Had an opportunity to head over there and get a chance to look at the new Nosler 30, which was making its debut at SHOT Show this week. Had a chance to talk with Zach Waterman of Nosler. And right now, I want to welcome to the program our friend J.R. Salzman, writer, lumberjack, warrior to the program. JR, how are you, sir?
I am great, Cam. How are you? I was expecting to see you here. Where are you at?
I know. I'm back in D.C. I'm actually hiding right behind you. You just can't see me.
I know. That's That's what I mean. You're in D.C. You're supposed to be here, man. What are you, shoveling snow back there?
Getting ready to. Hopefully I'll be able to make it all the way home before the snow hits. But listen, enough about me. I want to talk about you because earlier today there was a presentation from America's First Freedom. And give me a little backstory, JR. You knew that you were going to be there, right? But you didn't know what exactly this event was going to be, did you?
No, so, yeah, basically I was just told there was going to be some presentation, something that obviously involved a gun, and, you know, that was basically the only info I had, which, you know, after covering quite a few things for the NRA, I've had to go do stories where I had even less to go on, so, you know, I didn't think anything unusual of it, and sometimes you're just told, yeah, there's a story, it involves guns, it's in Quantico, go, you know? So, you know, hey, it's not a big thing. I had a little more guidance here, so I just figured, yeah, there's going to be a presentation, somebody's getting a gun, and that's about all the info I had.
And so you show up, and what happened, JR?
So I show up, and there's all the builders and these wonderful people who have come together to that have built this custom rifle. And next thing I know, there's Chris Cox. And he starts talking about me, and I'm like, okay, what is going on here? This is not about me. This is not why I do this. It's not why I served. But, you know, it's. So basically what happened is all these guys came together, and they created this amazing rifle for me, left-handed, you know, 308. You know, there's too much stuff on it for me to even sit here and list, but... it's just this amazing rifle that they put together, and they had done it in secret behind my back, didn't tell me, and Chris Cox presented it to me, and I'm blown away. I'm still blown away. I'm looking at this rifle here in front of me, and I'm going, is that really mine? You know, because that's one of those things any warrior, especially gun guy like me, wants something like this.
Right.
You know, you just realize it's probably not attainable, but these guys made it happen, and, you know, I'm forever grateful for that.
Well, listen, I think that we had a chance to talk with Mark Chestnut yesterday, and he kind of let me know what was going on, and I think everybody there at America's First Freedom was just so happy and honored that they could do something like this, because, you know, JR, and I think that you understand this as well, this is about more than just you. This is, you know, I think a small way of showing our appreciation and, you know, the folks from America's First Freedom's appreciation for everything that you've done for this country and everything that our military continues to do and the men and women of our military continue to do.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I've tried to do, you know, people like to sit and list off my accomplishments and, you know, that's all fine and dandy, but I think sometimes it gets lost in why you try to keep doing that and why I've continued fighting and tried to conquer the world. And, you know, I think you try to keep up that American fighting spirit that, you know, you might be knocked down, but you're not out, and you got to keep fighting. And, you know, and I try to exemplify that, and because there are wounded warriors out there and a lot of veterans who, you know, need that help up and they need that inspiration. So, you know, it's not really so much about me as it is trying to inspire people and help a fellow wounded warrior up and give them a hand up that they need so they can get back on that horse and get back to trying to conquer the world the way, you know, and conquer your battles one battle at a time, just like we were meant to be.
Absolutely. We're talking with J.R. Salzman, a writer and lumberjack and wounded warrior and all-around good guy, who, again, just got that incredible rifle earlier today. So, J.R., I've got to ask, I mean, you know, you talk about the work that you do to help those members of our military. How concerned are you right now about the state of affairs, both for the job that the men and women of our military are tasked to do and, the shape that our military is in right now?
I think there is way too much social engineering going on and way too many pet progressive causes and I don't know, focus on just letting our brave men and women to let them do their jobs. You know, I would say when fighting global warming is apparently supposed to be more important than killing ISIS, I would say we have a severe a lack of, you know, the best priorities out there. So there are a lot of changes that have been happening to the military. I don't agree with most of them, especially when they're made by people who have never served. They've never worn boots. They've never walked a mile in my boots or carried my pack. you know, and you really can't have people like that. You know, sometimes you just need to let the military do what it does best, and that is, of course, tackling our enemies, and our enemies are all over the place. ISIS is not contained. It's all over the place. It's in Europe. It's right here in America. And the reality is, let our military do what it does. Stop micromanaging. Stop getting it sidetracked with these ridiculous pet progressive causes. And, you know, in the same thing goes with diplomacy with Iran. I'm one of the 871 American troops who were wounded by an Iranian shape charge. There were somewhere in the neighborhood of 230 or 240 troops who were killed by Iranian shape charges. And now apparently Iran's going to be our buddies after they captured 12 of our sailors and humiliated them around the world. I mean, I think we have a severely warped view of the world in many of our politicians, and I don't think it's going to get better until those people are gone. So hopefully people are going to remember that on Election Day and remember those of us who have put our lives on the line for the country that they live in, and they'll remember us when they go to vote.
I know that, you know, you talk to a lot of active duty members of our military. How is morale? Is it... you know, are all of these programs and the fact that our military members seem to be used as guinea pigs for a lot of these pet projects, is it having an impact on morale for those active duty soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines?
You know, I'm honest. I don't think I could really answer that question. You know, that would obviously be up to somebody who's serving more, and I just don't think I've spoken with enough active duty people lately to kind of get a general idea of that. But I definitely see, you know, at least from the veteran standpoint, people are upset, you know, seeing the way the military is going, the political correctness that has seeped in, the so-called gender equality. I mean, look, here's the reality. I was a 190-pound guy wearing 30 or 40 pounds of gear. If I went down, would I feel comfortable with someone who's 110 or 120-pound woman trying to drag me out of the way? You know, and that's not to be sexist. That's just basic science and biology that men and women are different. And, you know, that's the reality. No amount of PC notions is going to change basic biology and science that men are stronger, especially in upper body strength, than women. You know, I think we all have roles to do in the military. Let us do the roles that we are best fitted for. And, you know, let's do the combat arms and stop trying to put a square peg in a round hole. And just let us do the job we were meant to do and that we were best, you know, that we were best created to do.
Again, talking with J.R. Salzman. And so, J.R., what is 2016 shaping up for you to be? What jobs will you be doing this year?
You know, it's early on in the year, so I guess I'm not thinking that far ahead. The big thing is just trying to stay warm in Wisconsin. But obviously, it's 60 here in Vegas. It was 17 below zero on Monday in Wisconsin. So, Right now, I'm looking at this amazing rifle here in front of me, and I'm anxious to get out and throw a few rounds downrange. And, you know, the reality is, it's 2016, unfortunately, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. And it's one of those things that, at least politically speaking, you know, I don't think we've seen the end of our enemies. This hunt and peck attitude that we've had toward our enemies around the world is not making a difference. You know, you either fight the fight or you get out of the way. And you can't do this, you know, this pathetic notion of trying to accomplish something when you're not really putting in the full effort. So, you know, thoughts and prayers to all of our brave wounded warriors out there and people that are doing their jobs. And, you know, I just know that those of us who are here back home are obviously supporting you, and we wish you all the best, and we're trying to look out for you.
Well, JR, listen, we appreciate everything that you do. I'm glad we had a chance to catch up with you. Congratulations again, and hope we get a chance to talk again soon.
Thanks, Cam. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. J.R. Salzman with us here on NRA News. Cam and Company from SHOT Show 2016 in Las Vegas, Nevada. We're going to take a quick time out. When we return to the program, our friend Katie Pavlich from Town Hall joins us for an extended conversation. So we'll stick around. We'll be right back with much more right after this. Here at Debbie Lee, it's our friend from America's Mighty Warriors. It's always good to see you, Debbie.
Oh, it's always good to be here and good to see you guys. We appreciate your support.
For people who don't know, remind us, why did you start America's Mighty Warriors?
I started America's Mighty Warriors in response to my son's amazing last letter home. Mark Lee was the first Navy SEAL that was killed in Iraq August 2nd, 2006. And that young man willingly stood up in the direct line of fire three times that day on purpose, gave his life for his teammates. And you don't get any better hero than that. And his last letter home ended with, "To my family and friends, do me a favor, pass on the kindness, the love, the precious gift of human life." So we founded America's Mighty Warriors to do that for our troops and for the families of the fallen, to make sure they're taken care of.
You know, you talk about people taking care of the families of the fallen and taking care of the survivors. We're in the Blade Tech booth right now because that's one of your sponsors. And when you look around and when you talk to the people and you talk to the companies here, the patriotism and the support that they do for military families, for military charities, for military efforts like yours, it's really a singular industry when it comes to that.
Yes, it is. And, you know, we've been privileged for 3 years to have the support from Blade Tech. And Tim and Kyle and the staff here are just absolutely amazing. But that's what makes such a difference. We come to these events, the NRA convention, and we see the heart of America. We see the patriotism. We see those that are willing to stand for the freedoms that our country was founded on.
You know, last time I talked to you, we hadn't encountered the level of the VA scandal that we're seeing now. And even after all the reports and all the talk and all the, well, we'll fix it, we're not seeing anything. Nothing's changing. It's so bad. As someone who is really into the topic, you know, I could just read the stories. Tell us what you're seeing.
You know, it's heart-wrenching to me. And it is disgusting that our government cannot, when our troops come home, our government can't be there and say, we will take care of you. You were willing to give your lives for us, and we owe it to you to make sure that we can give everything that you need, physically, emotionally, that we are there to support you and your families. And like I said, it just breaks my heart that we're not at that place as a government. And shame on our government that they can't do that and that they can't get it right. They have had how many years that the VA has had issues? This goes back 20 or 30 years. So they have had more than sufficient time to get this right and to make it honorable to those who serve, to let them know we love them, appreciate them, we'll never forget them. And that's part of why we stepped up to the plate at America's Mighty Warriors. And we're taking care of the funding for hyperbaric oxygen therapy treatments. We're sending our troops to Carrick Brain Institute in Texas. Any of those things that we're finding that we vet and find are successful treatments, we're doing that. But we're just a small charity. And that's why we require so many people to come alongside us, just like Blade Tech has done, to be able to make sure that those issues are taken care of us until our government can finally step up to the plate and do the right thing. We all need to step up. We need to be responsible. And whether it's finding someone in our own neighborhood, in our churches, and helping them, you know, pooling together the funding, get behind charities like ours who are making a difference. This isn't something we can pass off to our government. We've obviously seen that fail. Right. It's not something we can say, oh, well, somebody else is doing it. No, you need to personally be responsible. And you need to get to know those that have served in your community and make a difference in their lives. Have them over for dinner. If they're still deployed, you know, take care of childcare, mow their lawns, do something for them. Mark's letter talks about that, and he talks about the random acts of kindness, how we could change our world. He said, when's the last time you paid for a stranger's cup of coffee or helped someone with their groceries into or out of their car? And that's why he ends that letter to my family and friends. Do me a favor. Pass on the kindness, the love, the precious gift of human life. And so that's what we're doing at America's Mighty Warriors. I had no choice. The news that was given to me on August 2nd when we were notified Mark had been killed, I do have a choice how I respond. And my choice was to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and for the families of the fallen.
Well, where do people go online to donate as much money as humanly possible?
They go to americasmightywarriors.org. They can also learn more about Mark. He was one of the main characters in the movie American Sniper that was just out. Chris Kyle became like family to us, and they were close friends. Chris dedicated the book to Mark. And that young man believed in his mission. He believed in what he was doing there. And we were so proud of him. But his name meant Mighty Warrior. But it's not just about Mark. It is America's Mighty Warriors, because it's about each and every one of our men and women who served and sacrificed and given so much for the freedoms we enjoy every day. And I love each and every one of them. I wish I could shake every one of their hands. I'm trying to do that across America, make sure they all know how much we do love and appreciate them for the sacrifices they've paid for our freedoms.
Your first source for Second Amendment news and information. It's NRA News, Cam and Company. And we are continuing our coverage of SHOT Show 2016, even as I am back in the mothership with, I don't know what they're calling it, Snowmageddon. They just keep coming up with a cutesy phrase. I know the Weather Channel is calling it Winter Storm Jonas, which is just, no. Let's just call it a bad winter storm that's coming to many states. I think they're talking about 15 states. Going to be impacted by this. We figured that flights might be canceled if we didn't have
The ability to do the show from here today and Friday, we might not have a show on Monday, so we are making the best of it, and we are continuing our coverage of SHOT Show 2016, sponsored by our on-location sponsor, AdCor Defense. And I want to welcome to the program right now our friend from Town Hall, Katie Pavlich, who is there in Las Vegas. How are you, Katie?
Good. How are you? We missed you.
I miss you guys, too, and I'm sorry I wasn't there. I bet you're just crushed that you're going to miss all this the snow this weekend. Are you going to try to fly back?
Well, I'm actually... I'm taking a red eye out. So that's how badly I'm trying to get back. So we shall see. But I want to tell you that, you know, they name these blizzards and storms because storms have feelings too, Cam. So we just have to make sure that, you know, everyone is, you know, included in this process here.
Yeah, well, Winter Storm Jonas is going to get his feelings hurt because I imagine there are going to be millions of Americans cursing his name over the next couple of days. So.
Yes.
Consider that a microaggression, Mother Nature. Anyway, I hope that you are able to get back safe and sound. And in the meantime, are you enjoying SHOT Show?
I am. I actually just got back into town today. I was here at the beginning of the week, and my favorite part about SHOT Show is just all the people who are here. I mean, it's incredible to see, who is participating in the industry, you know, who these people really are, mom and pop shops, big companies, seeing how much they've contributed to society. There's tons of military walking around, as you know, foreign military, active duty. There's tons of service dogs here, which is awesome. So it's just, it's great to see all the guns and gear, all the new cool stuff, all the innovation, and to truly see what the industry is about. But every year I come, I just feel so refreshed about, you know, seeing who is actually active in the industry, because it's a lot of really incredible people.
You know, you're exactly right. And it's funny because, every year you get to catch up with old friends, but inevitably every year you also meet people for the very first time that as you say, are really inspiring people. I met a guy yesterday, Iggy, who was on season 4 of Top Shot. He's a Chicago cop, and he's also a firearms instructor. And we were talking about concealed carry in Chicago. And it was a fantastic conversation. I mean, here's this guy who is, he is exemplifying the right to keep and bear arms in one of the most anti-gun cities in the country. And he's also a law enforcement officer. So he's not out there saying, listen, my job would be easier if people didn't have guns. He's out there saying my job would be easier if people were able to protect themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's lots of people here. And I think that one thing that people miss about SHOT Show from the outside looking in, because it is industry people, it's not an open forum, as we all know, is that the show isn't just about 680,000 square feet of guns and gear. We have tons of classes that are going on. SHOT Show University was on Monday, where the NSSF has people come in to teach dealers how to obey the laws and to comply with everything that is required of them to have an FFL license. That's great. We also see, self-defense courses being offered here, courses about, other types of topics, political topics as well, what's going to happen in the 2016 year ahead. So there's so much to offer here. And it's also interesting to see different kinds of people here. I mean, it's very easy for the industry to be stereotyped by our gun control lobby friends. But that stereotype, I think, is gone. We're seeing more women here. We see more minorities here. And they really, truly believe in the Second Amendment, because guess what? It applies to all of us, regardless of race or gender. So it's really exciting to see such a diverse group of people here and continuing into the years ahead. I believe this is a 38th annual SHOT Show, which is incredible. And they're just going to keep on going as we move forward into the future.
Eventually, it's just going to take over the entire city of Las Vegas, because really they are they're kind of running out of room there, the Sands Convention Center. They're going to have to start renting more hotel rooms, I guess, and putting displays in there, because the industry really is growing. And where we're set up, actually just down Radio Row, they've got what's called SHOT Show Next. And these are emerging companies, smaller companies. And NSSF has, decided we want these folks to have a place and a seat at the table as well. Because, you walk around the exhibit floor and there are these monstrous setups that, I don't know how much they cost to put together. But if you're just starting out your business, you can't afford, $40,000 for a display. And I think it's really cool that NSSF is actually, acknowledging this, that these are companies that deserve and need to get a little recognition. And they deserve and need a place to set up shop there as well.
Yeah, I mean, this place is busting at the seams, which is incredible because, as you know, you can't get to all the booths. It's impossible. Even if you're here for 5 days straight, 4 days straight, if you were to spend 17 seconds at every single booth, then maybe you would make it to all of them. But it is virtually impossible. So it is great to see. If you've been here for a couple years in a row especially, you've seen the big displays. You've seen the big companies. It's always really fun to see the mom and pop companies that come up from the bottom, as many of the big companies did. And they're able to have a voice here and really, you know, sell their products to bigger stores, to bigger businesses, interact with people, make those connections to, you know, that down the road enable them to be very successful. And it's also just really interesting to see how much innovation there is here. I mean, in the individual personalization of everything. I mean, one thing I've noticed here is there's a lot of AR customization, and more than I think there's been in the past. We've seen it before, but now, you know, any kind of color AR you want, you're going to get it, and there's more people doing that now, and so it's really customized to the individual, which I think allows more people to come in to the industry as a whole, because people feel like, you know, they have to fit into some box. They can come in as their own people, and they do, and it's just really exciting to see more people be getting involved, more people being successful at it, and it's a clear indication that, you know, the industry is growing despite all of the attacks that we've seen over the course of the past 7 years, especially recently. So it's very exciting to see us thriving here.
Absolutely, and one of the, you know, one of the few industries in this country that that is growing, quite frankly, and you know, so that, which I think is even more remarkable when you look at the attacks, as you say, that have been made over the past 7 years. Americans have responded with our wallets, and we have responded with us exercising our rights, in many cases deciding for the very first time that we want to buy a firearm.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I mean, you look at the numbers here in terms of the new people buying firearms. I mean, women say the number one reason why they're purchasing their first handgun is for self-defense, and we've seen that trending not only just with women, but with everyone who's getting into firearms for the first time. In terms of the economic impact that we're having here, you know, it's amazing to me that this part gets ignored in all of the rhetoric that we hear. The firearms industry has a $40 billion a year economic impact. The firearms industry has doubled the amount of good-paying middle-class jobs over the past 7 years, when we've seen jobs and unemployment be a real struggle for most of the other industries in the country. And so they're doing a lot of good, and I think it's important that we point things out outside of maybe the gun control argument and really start focusing, too, on how positive this industry has been for the overall economy and the country and, quite frankly, the world. I mean, I've been walking around here. I've heard so many different languages being spoken among the attendees. I mean, it really is amazing to see that this is a global place for people to come. And that, yes, we have the Second Amendment here, but this is a global enterprise, and there are a lot of people here from all over the world really embracing what we have to offer as Americans. It's just really exciting.
Absolutely. Now let's talk a little bit about politics and the election season, Katie, because you know, Hillary Clinton right now is really going all in as the anti-gun candidate. She's beating up Bernie Sanders for not being as anti-gun as she is. We've seen the Brady campaign, Americans for Responsible Solutions, and a Third Way come out and bash Bernie here. And what's fascinating is, even on the Democratic side, as Hillary Clinton goes after Bernie Sanders for being not anti-gun enough, what's happening to the polls, Katie? It seems like Bernie Sanders is kind of gaining in popularity. It doesn't seem like that is an effective attack, even in a Democratic primary this year.
Yeah. And this is what's been so interesting about the Hillary campaign so far, is that they have been unabashedly unabashedly pro-gun control.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think that Hillary would learn from President Bill Clinton's mistakes when he, of course, signed the assault weapons bill into law, and they lost the House by huge numbers. You fast forward to Barack Obama's presidency, and Rahm Emanuel, when he wasn't, you know, running Chicago and covering up corrupt behavior in that city, he cautioned President Obama against even bringing this up until he was reelected in 2012, because it was such a toxic issue. Hillary needs all the help she can get. And the fact that she's not only lying about the industry in terms of saying that they have whatever, you know, she wants to say about immunity, she also, you know, is attacking the very people who, you know, this isn't a partisan issue. Gun control is something that spans Republicans, Democrats, and independents. And as a country, we've seen more people now believe that gun rights should be protected rather than infringed upon with more gun control. And so she's extremely out of touch with it. And I'm curious to see which advisor is telling her that this is still a good idea to be going after this issue. Because as you said, Bernie Sanders, it's not affecting him as much as she's attacking him. I think that Hillary has gone farther left on in a lot of issues in the party than maybe she thought she should, and that people are willing to be receptive to, even in a Democratic primary. I mean, we have a socialist on the economy, but when it comes to gun rights, I think that we have a broader spectrum of people who really aren't interested in more gun control, which is a win. It's a victory.
Absolutely. I think you're exactly right. And, you know, go back to this Washington Post poll that was taken, I don't know, maybe a month or so ago, and they asked, do you want to see D.C. bring back its gun ban? It was kind of a stupid question because it's a hypothetical. It, you know, it would violate the Heller decision if they did. But the Post right. noted that the areas of the city that were least supportive of bringing back a ban were those high crime neighborhoods, Katie. And the writer mm-hmm. couldn't figure this out. Like, these are the people who are most impacted by crime, and yet they are least supportive of bringing back a gun ban. Meanwhile, if you made over $100,000 a year, if you had a postgraduate degree, and if you were liberal, then you were in favor of bringing back the gun ban. Look, I think it's become painfully obvious to people who live in D.C., Chicago, Los Angeles. If you live in a bad neighborhood, you're a good person living in a bad neighborhood, you know these gun control laws aren't protecting you. You know that you're not better off because there's a gun ban. It just means that you can't get a gun to protect yourself.
Which is incredible, because someone like Hillary Clinton or even Barack Obama will say that they're standing up for the poor and the minorities in the country, mm-hmm. this country. And one part of the argument that we don't see enough is that gun control disproportionately and negatively affects minorities and poor people. And when Hillary Clinton talks about taking away gun rights, it doesn't affect rich white liberals like her who can pay for 24-hour security. It affects poor people in neighborhoods who really are dealing with violent crime and who for years have been victims as a result of government policies and policies that come from people like Hillary who think that they know better, even though they've never walked through those neighborhoods. They probably never had a conversation with someone who lives in those neighborhoods. And even when we see the sentiment expressed, like, look, I live in a bad neighborhood, I like a handgun to defend myself, Hillary then comes back and has the nerve to say that she knows better when it comes to overall overall policy that's going to change that. And the Washington Post question is a perfect example of that. You have the question about it, and all of the white people, liberal elites living in Washington, D.C., are making a decision based on something that they never have to experience. They don't go to those parts of town because they don't have to. And it really is quite disgusting to me that they think that they know better when they've never had to deal with that reality.
You know, I'm right there with you. And you talk about the duplicity that we're seeing in these arguments. Hillary Clinton talking about the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. Saying that, you know, the gun industry is the only industry where there's kind of immunity is provided here. She doesn't talk about, and there's actually a piece in the LA Times today, Katie, talking about why changing the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act would be a bad idea, which kind of surprised me that the LA Times would carry a piece like this. But she doesn't talk about what the law actually does and does not do. She wants to characterize this right. as this sort of, you know, blanket immunity for gun manufacturers. They can sell defective products, they can do whatever they want, and they're never going to get sued. What she doesn't say is that she wants to be able to have someone sue a gun manufacturer mm-hmm. For the actions of a violent criminal.
Right. Exactly. I mean, she's not only not saying these things about what the law actually means, she's flat out lying about the fact that the industry has immunity that other industries don't. The gun industry is responsible for bad products. They're not responsible for bad people. And it's not only Hillary Clinton pushing this out. John Podesta, who, of course, is one of Hillary Clinton's top campaign advisors, runs Think Progress. Think Progress has been putting out the same talking points on this issue and lying about what what the law actually does. And in the end, as you know, and a lot of your listeners know, this is about being able to sue gun manufacturers out of business, and especially the little guys who are down the way here who don't have the big money like a Glock or a Smith & Wesson or a SIG to fight off these frivolous lawsuits. The idea that they want people to be gun manufacturers and companies to be responsible for the bad behavior of people who use their firearms illegally when they've done everything possible to make sure that they're holding up their end of the deal when it comes to obeying the laws and regulations that we have in the books is absurd. And it's completely contrary to any type of business laws that we have on the books in this country. You know, car manufacturers aren't responsible for someone who goes out and uses their car to mow down people. And bleach companies aren't responsible for people who use bleach to kill people. I mean, it's just not how we do things. The gun industry is not an exception.
Absolutely. I mean, if you were to, I mean, under what Hillary Clinton is saying, that you know, somebody who drove to a bank and then used a gun to commit a bank robbery, we can sue the firearms manufacturer for making the gun, but why would we not in turn be able to sue Ford or Chevy for making that car that also apparently contributed to that crime? It doesn't make a lot of sense, which is why we're not getting a lot of honest talk about this. And unfortunately, I don't think that's going to change. But, you know, one other area we're not getting a lot of honest talk, we haven't for some time, is the Fast and Furious investigation. We saw this week a federal judge, Amy Berman Jackson, telling the Obama administration, no, your claims of executive privilege regarding these subpoenaed documents don't carry weight. You need to turn over these documents that Congress demanded. Do you think we'll ever get them?
Right. And this is something I think that we probably will. I don't know if it'll be anytime soon. You have to keep in mind that President Obama asserted executive privilege back in 2012. I remember I was sitting in the hearing room when this happened, 15 minutes before the House Oversight Committee was getting ready to vote Eric Holder in contempt of Congress for refusing to turn over this documentation. And let's not forget that President Obama asserted this executive privilege after claiming for years he had no idea that this was happening, and yet all of a sudden he was, you know, specifically involved in making sure that Eric Holder didn't have to turn over information that could have been very damaging to him. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But I think when a federal judge issues a ruling like that, you know, we see a little more movement. And let's keep in mind that the judge in this case, Judge Berman, she was appointed by President Obama to that bench. And so this is not some partisan witch hunt. This is not some judge who was appointed by a Republican who's trying to revive this story. This is a real problem that we've had for years, and a strategy that's been used by the Obama administration to drag this out. And there's a reason why we haven't talked about Fast and Furious in a while, and it's because we haven't been able to get any kind of documentation to further give the public information about it. So this is a good thing, but we'll just have to see if the Justice Department is going to comply. And let's not forget that a big part of DOJ's document turnovers in the past have been pages and pages of blacked out ink. And so that could definitely be something that we see and have to go back to court and take a look at, you know, are they really redacting everything that they should or should not be? So there's a whole other level here of fighting that we're going to see. But it is a positive step forward.
Do you remember when this was called the most transparent administration in history, Katie? Do you remember that?
What was that? Yeah. No, I don't remember it ever being that. I remember a claim that it would be that. I don't remember it ever being that. But, yeah, I remember a promise a long time ago about that.
Right.
Yeah,
well, it is, you know, it is good to know that this this case does continue. I mean, as slow as the wheels of justice may be turning, I know that, you know, a couple of years ago there was a lot of concern and thought that maybe once Fast and Furious disappeared from the news cycle that all of these efforts to continue getting more information would sort of fall by the wayside. And clearly that's not the case. I mean, there is a continuous effort to try to get this information still from the administration.
Right. And well, I think, you know, tying it back to our previous conversation about Hillary Clinton, let's not forget that last week Hillary Clinton said that Attorney General Eric Holder was one of the best AGs as this country has ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I would caution people to understand that it's a very important election for a couple reasons. One of them being that Hillary Clinton, if she's elected, will have the opportunity to appoint at least 3 Supreme Court justices. Eric Holder's relationship with Hillary Clinton goes back to the 90s when Bill Clinton appointed him to be the U.S. Attorney in Washington, D.C. And during the 90s, as you know, We have tape and video of Eric Holder saying he wants to brainwash people against guns. And so we have to think of that in those terms. Not to mention Eric Holder was held in criminal and civil contempt both by Republicans and Democrats, and yet here we are with the front runner on the Democratic side saying that he was one of the best attorney generals in the history of the country. And of course she would say that considering Eric Holder was very good at covering things up during his tenure at the Justice Department, and Hillary Clinton, of course, was very good at trying, well, not very good, I would say that she's tried, attempted to cover up her bad behavior during her time at the State Department. You know, Eric Holder is not gone. He is still going to be around, and I'd say he has a much longer relationship with the Clintons than he ever did with Barack Obama.
Talking again with Katie Pavlich, our friend from Town Hall. Katie, we're almost out of time, but thank you for joining us on the program, and hopefully you make it back to D.C. safe and sound.
Yes, wish me luck.
I'll keep my fingers crossed for
you. Snowshoes.
There you go. Katie Pavlich, yeah. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, coming up
in Hour 3, Clint Romachet, Medal of Honor recipient, had a chance to chat with Clint at the AdCorp booth at SHOT Show 2016 in Las Vegas, Nevada. Also, Dr. Jacqueline Kelly of Armed and Heels. It has been too long since we've talked with Dr. Jacqueline Kelly, but we'll do so next hour. Rob Pincus of the Personal Defense Network joining us on NRA News Cam and Company. We also have our Deal of the Day, our Hero of the Day, and our Good Guy of the Day coming up at the top of Hour 3. We're also continuing to follow some of the latest Second Amendment news and information for you, talking a little bit about the bills that have been introduced in state legislatures around the country. You've got, well, there's the music. All right, well, we'll get into some of the gory details coming up in Hour 3. Stick around. We have a lot more coverage of SHOT Show 2016, sponsored by our on-location sponsor, AdCorp. Coming up right after this quick timeout, more NRA News Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler's, on the way. We'll be right back right after this.
Speaking with Larry Pancake and Richard Weathers with Republic Forge. Gentlemen, welcome to NRA News. What's new with Republic Forge?
Well, I tell you, since we talked with you in April, we've introduced a couple of things. We've got out our case-hardened and our blued guns. So we're doing a lot of guns now that with case-hardened frames and blued slides or total case-hardened. We're also still offering all the sub-gauges and sub-calibers, 38 Super, 9mm, 40, 45, 10mm. We've got a new Defiant model. That's an all case hardened gun, this one is, and it's got a full size grip frame with an officer's top. So you've got the full grip frame for a big meaty hand guy like myself, but the smaller officer's model barrel for concealment. And we've also got a new gun that's a stainless slide with integrated RMR. And we're building it mainly for, you know, PPC shooters and IDPA shooters and stuff like that. So it's going to be a stainless gun with a chrome moly frame. And you'll be able to get it with the RMR or T1 or whatever you'd like as far as slide-mounted optics. And so that's a new feature that we've got. Always looking at integrating new things. We're looking at aluminum frame guns right now and alloy frame guns. We've got that in the works. So in the next 12 months or so, you should start seeing some of that. And as always, we're integrating more and more of our manufacturing process into Texas. We started out being, you know, built in our facility in Texas, but a lot of our parts were sourced out of other states from American-made products. Each month, we're integrating more and more. We're going to be, at some point, a Texas-made gun, period. We've got a foundry and a forge that's doing our frames and slides now in Texas. All of our internal parts are still made in the USA. Truly all-American-made gun, just like we have been, but we're trying to get back home to doing everything in the state of Texas. Case Hardened is a very, very pretty. It's a pretty finish. I mean, you've got lots and lots of colors. It's an old school finish. They did it back in the 1800s with charcoal and heat. They do it now with cyanide gas and several other processes. But it's a really pretty, durable finish, like bluing. But each gun is individual. Every time you case harden a gun, the patterns come out different like they do on Damascus. And it's a really striking way to finish a real high-end custom-built gun.
So you're talking an aesthetic advantage, and it really does make for a beautiful firearm.
Absolutely. And the same way with the blue. You know, the blue guns, a lot of people just love the old classic blued gun, from the deep dark royal blue that turns purple when it patinas. It's just a classic finish, and they wear well and they're pretty. So we had a call for it. People kept saying, man, we'd love to have one of your pistols, but we'd like to have it in a traditional finish. So we answered the call, and we're doing it now.
All right, Larry and Richard, tell us a little bit about Republic Forge. What are you guys all about? How'd you come into existence?
Okay, well, Republic Forge was born out of a group of guys in Texas that wanted to have an all-American-made pistol, a truly all-American-made, every part of it, not just 60% of it, but all of it, made in America. So they got together, and Republic Forge was born. And Republic Forge is American-made right down to the hand tools. The hand tools that we use to build these guns are made in the USA. I mean, people started nitpicking us enough that we even now have hats and shirts made in the USA because they said, hey, your hats aren't made in the USA.
I can relate to that, by the way, with NRA News hats.
Absolutely. So, you know, it just... why would you not want built in America? I mean, the way the world is today and the things that are going on, American-made is the way to go. We want jobs. We want the people to stay American dollars in America. And our company slogan is built by Americans for the Republic.
How do you get more information about Republic Forge and all the products?
You can visit our website at republicforge.com. There's an interactive gun builder on the website where you can actually build your dream 1911. Try colors, try sights, try grips. When you get done and the golden halo appears over it, you look at the bottom right-hand corner. It tells you how much it is. Click the buy it now, and they'll send it to the Republic Forge dealer nearest you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Hour 3 of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, starts right now. Covering SHOT Show 2016, our on-location sponsor, Ad Corps Defense. We'll hear from Clint Romachet, Medal of Honor recipient at the Ad Corps booth, coming up in just a couple of minutes. Also later in the hour, Dr. Jacqueline Kelly joining us from Armed and Heels, and Rob Pincus of the Personal Defense Network will join us on the program. It is the Shooting, Hunting, Outdoor Trade Show, so yes, it is far more than firearms there in Las Vegas, Nevada. Right now, though, I want to get to our deal of the day, our hero of the day, and our good guy of the day. We'll start with the deal of the day from Click 2, Houston Channel 2 in Houston, Texas. They say charges have been filed against a man that police say sexually assaulted a 12-year-old girl at a Southwest Houston pharmacy when the girl got separated from her mom. 27-year-old Christopher Michael Barrios has been charged with aggravated sexual assault of a child. According to documents, a mother and daughter were shopping at the store when the two became separated for a short amount of time. The girl said she was in the aisle looking at back scratchers when the man motioned for her to come to him. The girl said that when she approached the man, he exposed himself. The girl said that he then took her into the bathroom of the store, sexually assaulted her, and then left. Investigators reviewed CBS surveillance video. They saw a man matching Barrios' description on the footage made the arrest. Police records, according to Click 2 Houston, show that he has a lengthy criminal... Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, they did not make an arrest. Police records show that he has a lengthy criminal history, including charges for resisting arrest, trespassing, drug possession, and theft. And officers, according to Channel 2 in Houston, are still trying to find the man so that they actually can arrest him somehow. Even though they have not yet made an arrest, bond has already been set. I'm not sure how that works, but that's what Channel 2 in Houston is reporting. A man with a lengthy criminal history again. No word on the disposition of any of those previous cases or why the suspect in this sexual assault of a 12-year-old girl was not behind bars, given his criminal history. Our hero of the day from WSAZ, a store owner fighting back during an armed robbery from Wayne County, West Virginia. They say it was last Saturday in, at a Fort Gay convenience store. And they think that this robbery last Saturday morning was actually connected to an attempt to steal an ATM at the same location it was 1 week ago. The Wayne County Sheriff's Department arrested James Daniel Hicks, 39 years old. Deputies also think there may be a second suspect. During the robbery, Hicks was shot by the owner of the store. WSAZ reports the owner is not being charged. Hicks' injuries considered non-life-threatening. And, again, one outstanding suspect, but also a one-store owner defending himself and his property there in Fort Gay, West Virginia. Our good guy of the day from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, TMJ, Channel 4, with the story of a local driver there in Milwaukee
a bus driver, Milwaukee County Transit Service driver, being praised for her decision to pull over for two teens who appeared to be in danger. There was a photo that was sent to TMJ, Channel 4, earlier in the week, and the TV station says it showed a photo of a police officer with his gun drawn and a woman with scissors in her hand. The woman was later taken into custody for mental health concerns. The Milwaukee County Transit Service says the driver followed her instincts and training to provide a safe haven for the girls. The girls were there on the street. They report she then called dispatch, who called Milwaukee police, where they were able to, again, take that woman into custody. Brendan Conway with MCTS says she pulled over. They got on her bus. They actually used her bus as a safe haven. MCTS, by the way, say that they train drivers for situations exactly like this. But James Mason, Macon, the transit union president, disagrees, says drivers don't get training to do things like this. He said that was something the driver basically did on their own. The transit service also says that it is an example of how their drivers go above and beyond to serve. Said our drivers are the eyes and ears of the community. James Macon, again, the transit union president, said the union has some questions about safety on the buses. Why can't they call 911? He said, why can't the drivers get out of their seat? You're in the back of the bus getting beat up. Guess what? The driver is going to watch and call dispatchers. Now, the transit service says that's because the drivers need to be able to keep all of the passengers safe. A driver, quote, needs to focus on making sure the bus is pulled over, at least stopped, and then doing everything that they can to help any passengers who might be there. So you've got some disputes there between the transit service and the union as to whether or not this is actually something that drivers are taught to do and what other considerations drivers might have when they see evidence of a violent act even being performed on their bus. But one thing that the two sides can't agree on is that the driver there, who was able to provide that safe haven for those two young girls in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, definitely acted not just being in the right place at the right time, but stepping up and doing the right thing. And for that, that driver is our good guy of the day. All right, want to take you back to Las Vegas in SHOT Show 2016. Yesterday afternoon, after we wrapped up our broadcast of NRA News Cam and Company, I finally had the opportunity to get down into the exhibit hall for a couple of hours, which was fantastic. We made a beeline over to the ADCOR defense booth, which is, if you're there at SHOT, by the way, it's on the lower level in the 2200 block. And we found our friend Clint Romache, former Staff Sergeant, U.S. Army retired, Medal of Honor recipient. And we had the opportunity to spend a little bit of time with Clint. Take a look and a listen.
Well, we are here at the ADCOR booth at SHOT Show 2016. ADCOR, of course, our on-location sponsor for 2016. And our friend Clint Romache, you're hanging out of the booth all week long, right?
Yeah, back here with ADCOR once again for another great SHOT Show, showing off some of the rifles again and just, you know, linking back up with old friends and old people that it's good to be with.
You know, it's good that we have a chance to hang out and spend at least a couple of minutes together here. I got to tell you, I've been shooting the heck out of my ADCOR rifle, and, you know, I can say it's everything that you said it would be, Clint, honestly. I mean, it is rugged, it is dependable, and it is accurate as all get out, man. I mean, really.
I mean, yeah, having you at the range day and you know, finally getting a rifle into your hands, I mean, it just, you know, you can say you can build something that's going to be accurate and reliable, but everyone can say whatever they want. It's when you come to prove it, and actions always speak louder than words, and that's what ADCOR has done time and time again.
So kind of walk us through. We've got an ADCOR right here, right? This is the Elite A556, right?
Yep. It's our 556, 223, whatever you want it, really. because of our gas piston system, we can go suppressed, unsuppressed, or if you're firing, like I said, 556 or Remington 223, everything's toolless, one button. I can push out, dial my gas in right there so I don't have to break my rifle apart. That it's designed to be very simplistic, except the thing that's always attracted me is the forward charging handle, non-reciprocating ambidextrous that allows you to stay on target and trigger in case you have something go wrong. But the great thing about it is just that quick. If we got a lefty that's coming in to shoot right there, and he can, you know, have the same benefits of having that forward charge and handle ready to go.
Again, no time-lapse photography here. I mean, it really is just that easy. And you know, the fact that this is a toolless system, like, I'm not particularly mechanically inclined, but this is, it's simple enough that even I don't have a problem with this. Like, when I first started shooting, it was running a little low, and so I was able to adjust the gas right there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, really, within 2 minutes, I'm like, oh, okay, good, we're done.
You can do it with the tip of a bullet. I mean, it's not, you have to dig in and grab a Gerber out and start adjusting, tweaking things. I mean, it's just right there to fix it, simple, easy.
So how did you get involved with AdCor? I mean, do they come to you and say, Clint, we want to give you a fistful of cash and in return say nice things about our product? Is that how it worked?
AdCor actually just sent me a rifle kind of out of the blue, and basically with a very simple email that said, hey, we'd like to send you a rifle. No strings attached. Just shoot it and tell us what you think. And, of course, it shows up, and immediately, you know, it's always in the back of your mind, well, what's the motive behind this? Where are the strings at? And so I left the rifle in the closet for almost 3 weeks. Didn't even, you know, I'd seen plenty of black rifles. I pulled it out, and I started looking at some of the things on it, and it's like the innovation with the free-floated piston system, the forward charging handle. It's like, why didn't someone think of this before? And then as I started doing my research, you know, come to find out they were one of the four down selects for the carbine competition. They had pulled money out of their own pocket to get the laws changed, because before you couldn't have open competition because the defense contracts were all locked in for years and years. And they understood, Jimmy the owner and AdCor, you know, their philosophy is competition drives innovation. And that's what they've truly brought to market, is something totally innovative that no one else has. Because of that competitive spirit and the fact that they're not gun guys, they're bottling machine guys. And they understand how to build a machine with 20,000 parts that runs for 6 months straight without any maintenance on it. Well, we can build a gun that, you know, I think this has a total of, to put the lower parts kit, less than, 25 major components? I mean, so we're talking fractions of what it takes. And it's just a machine. Let's get the bullet in through the barrel, on target, the most accurate, reliable way possible, and they've proven it because of the performance reports you can see at H&P White, and just getting behind the thing and shooting.
You know, one of the cool things that you mentioned is that AdCor didn't start out as a gun company.
Yep.
I love hearing the backstories of how products get made, and AdCor, I mean, they make firearms, they make great firearms, but they also make a lot of other products within the defense industry, right?
Yes, they make components for the Triton missile systems, radar components for our fixed-wing aircrafts, the F-16s, 18s. I mean, it's aerospace precision. It's not, you know, anybody can say, oh, I'm pretty precise, but they have the backup to say, we're sending our stuff up in the air. We're sending it into space. They built tools for the Hubble Space Telescope. I mean, it's very precise things. If you need one of these beard hairs cut 30 different times lengthwise, they can do it there. They're that precise.
That's amazing. And you're still shooting that first rifle that AdCor sent you, right?
Yes, still shooting it. Actually, it was my Coyote gun until this year, until they came out with their new key mod system. And it's been a little easier to put the overwhites on it to shoot the key mod for coyote hunting. So I'm kind of transitioning out. But it's still the same rifle.
That is awesome. Well, you know, we love the fact that that we've got the opportunity to go visit the factory, to go shoot it at the range. It was really, really interesting actually going to the factory and seeing, you know, how this gets made, how it gets put together. It's a lot bigger process than what I was anticipating it would be. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, to go from, since everything's machined out of solid aluminum, to take a chunk of aluminum to produce this, I mean, it doesn't happen in, you know, overnight. It takes some serious engineering, some processing on the best and effective way to get it to perform the way it is. And hey, it's not like whittling on an old piece of block wood to make your gun that you're going to play with your buddies on the weekend with. It's a true precision machine.
Absolutely. And it's versatile, it's rugged. I mean, as you say, this is your Coyote gun, right?
Yep.
I mean, you're out there using this gun.
When it's negative 25 and, I mean, performs in the weather, I've just basically been cleaning the front piston area. I haven't touched any of the guts of the internals because it just runs so clean and smooth. And, you know, I've dropped it a few times. And it's
once or twice.
Up and, yeah, shake it off and cuss yourself out for being clumsy, but yeah, performs flawless.
And behind you, we've got some of the other models here, right? Because you get, you have different barrel lengths. I mean, what are some of the options that are available here?
You know, we run everything from our barrel lengths come in from 10 inch all the way up to a 20 inch version. A couple of years ago, at, you know, at SHOT Show, we were at the range day. We had an 18 inch version. We were hitting 12 by 12 steels at 800 with a 55 grain surplus round. Not that it was going to do a whole lot of good at that range, but still to show that you can take this weapon and it's a precision gun. You know, so we everything in between 14, 16 inches. We have our 223 556 models. We've got our 300 blackouts, 7.62 by 3.9. We have a 308 that's in the works, hopefully coming out pretty soon, because I know that's kind of the big thing is everyone's wanting to know, when are you bringing a 308 out? Well, hopefully soon. Not going to make any promises exactly when, but that just...
It's coming.
It's coming.
Well, that is exciting to hear, and that just means that I have more models that I have yet to shoot. I'm excited about this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, the key mod was kind of a new thing we were doing this year, getting away from the quad rail. And like I said, with that gas system, the big thing is the 300 blackout models. Everyone is going, you know, they like the 300 blackout for the ability to suppress it. And just in the design of that, you're able to adjust it to go suppressed, unsuppressed. You know, the whole trigger mechanism is a little redesigned that to ease out the cycling problems that some of the other manufacturers ran into, where they thought we could take material off the bolt carrier to lighten that bolt carrier so as it cycles, it's okay. But we looked at it and we realized that, you know, that the resistance and friction you get off the springs and the buffer, we need to kind of bring those down, lighten them up a bit, and just run flawless.
Well, listen, I appreciate you spending a couple of minutes with us. We're really, really proud of our relationship with ADCOR, and we're really grateful that y'all are our on-location sponsor this year. I hope that we get a chance to catch up again really soon, Clint.
That'd be awesome. Thanks, Cam.
Thanks so much, man. Here at the ADCOR Defense booth at SHOT Show 2016. And again, we want to thank ADCOR for being our on-location sponsor this year.
And we'll be talking more with the folks from ADCOR again coming up throughout the year here. And tomorrow we'll head over to the Nosler booth and spend some time with the fine folks there at Nosler. They've got the Nosler 30 that they debuted at SHOT this year. We'll talk about that coming up on tomorrow's program. Dr. Jacqueline Kelly of Armed with Heels is coming up after a quick timeout. They're in Las Vegas at the Shooting Hunting Outdoor Trade Show. Rob Pincus of the Personal Defense Network coming up later in the hour as well. So stick around. We'll be right back with more NRA News Cam and Company right after this.
Speaking with Zach Waterman from Nosler. Zach, welcome back to NRA News. Good to talk to you, sir. And you've got something new, ballistic tip ammunition. Tell us about it.
Ballistic tip ammunition. It's composed of Nosler's famous ballistic tip bullets and, of course, Nosler's ammunition. So kind of the best of both worlds there, and really designed for America's most popular game or big game, deer, antelope, and hogs, in America's most popular cartridges. So 243 Winchester, 270 Winchester, 7mm 08, the 30-30, 308, and of course the king, the 30-06.
I'll take a box in all of them, okay?
Absolutely. I'll get that order written up immediately.
Thank you. Hey, so tell folks, how did Nosler come about to developing and introducing the ballistic tip ammunition?
Well, the majority of big game hunters out there are hunting these animals, the whitetail. They're very prolific in most of the country. Where we're from in Oregon, we're used to, you know, elk hunting and deer hunting and a little bit of pronghorn hunting. You know, you don't necessarily need a partition bullet or a Nosler Accubond to go hunt, you know, whitetail and hogs. You can certainly do that with our most popular deer bullet that we make, the ballistic tip bullet. So we decided to take that bullet, load it into ammunition, and provide a very high value ammunition for the hunters out there.
Well, I'll tell you what, Zach Warner with Nosler, that's what we call a win-win. When you take those two components from Nosler and combine them together to get the new ballistic tip ammunition, that sounds great. I can't wait to check it out. All right, Zach, how can folks get more information about this new product from Nosler and all the other great products that Nosler offers?
You can just check out our website at Nosler.com.
It's that easy, Nosler.com.
That's easy.
As soon as we finish this interview, I'm going right there. Zach Waterman with Nosler, thank you so much for what you do, and thank you, sir, for being on NRA News. We appreciate it.
The young Americans who raised their hands to fight radical Islamic terror deserve a commander-in-chief as courageous as they are. They volunteered to fight an enemy you won't name, and many gave their limbs and lives to win ground you surrendered. No previous generation of American soldiers, sailors, airmen, guardsmen, or Marines have been sent into harm's way by political leaders so unwilling to define what matters most, victory. These brave patriots have a deeper understanding of America's place and purpose in the world than Washington's so-called elites and their media enablers. And someday soon, in places America liberated, then abandoned, like Fallujah, Ramadi, and Mosul, tomorrow's troops may have to fill their brothers' bloody boots. These are my heroes, willing to fight and die for my freedom. And I demand a commander-in-chief worthy of such sacrifice. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
We don't rise up to the occasion, but instead fall back on our level of training.
Champions spend hours practicing for the smallest improvements.
In order not to be a victim, it's important that you have a plan.
That's the perfect time to take your shot.
I am Gabby Franco, and I'll see you next time in another episode of Tips and Tactics, sponsored by Cabela's Outdoor Fun.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler. And again, our on-location sponsor this year, Adcore Defense, covering the shooting, the hunting, outdoor trade show in Las Vegas, Nevada, from back here in Washington, D.C., as we await the winter nightmare that is heading our way, maybe your way as well. Hope that you are prepared, that you've had a chance to go to the store. Your car's gassed up. You've got some water stored just in case the power goes out. This is this could be the real deal here. I know that sometimes forecasters may err on the side of caution or perhaps hype up weather events, but the forecast models look like this could be a major storm for a major portion of the country. So if it's going to impact you, I hope that you are prepared and you are ready. Now, I want to welcome to the program from Las Vegas, Nevada, and the 2016 SHOT Show, our friend Dr. Jacqueline Kelly from Armed and Heels. How are you, Jack?
Hi, Cam. We miss you.
I know.
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad that you're with us on the program. It does stink that the first time we get a chance to see you in person in a while, it's not actually in person. But hopefully we'll be able to catch up in person at some point soon. And I do appreciate you coming on the program today. How's everything going with Armed and Heels?
Oh, everything's going great. We had a big life change in Armed and Heels. As you know, Armed and Heels is owned by my husband and I. We're a small business out in Phoenix as an online retailer, and we welcomed our first baby boy into the world last year. So it has been a crazy adjustment. Now Armed and Heels certainly, I'm sure, will reflect a mommy twist because that is now part of who we are, who I am. But I'm back and excited to be at the show so we can really start to see what new products we can bring to women that will really start to and continue to empower them as they work to grow their identity and continue to carry and protect themselves.
And that is awesome. Well, first of all, congratulations. It is a life-changing event and experience. I will ask you the same question I asked Natalie Foster, who also became a new mom recently. Are you getting any sleep yet?
I didn't get any sleep for a very long time. I think comparatively, I am now getting some sleep, but I'm not sure that it's appropriate and acceptable with the norm of what normal people get.
Hopefully,
we'll get there.
Yeah, I was going to say, hopefully that will change. It shouldn't last forever. I'll be honest with you, I don't really remember much about the first 6 months of any of my kids being there because it was just this sleep-deprived nightmare. I remember, you know, little moments, but not a whole lot that I could tell you about those first 6 months other than you don't get a lot of sleep, there's a lot of crying. But every day you're watching your child do something new, and it's so cool to see your child, every little thing, you know. And until you're a parent, I don't know that that you understand how neat it is to watch that progression, because I know that before I was a dad, people could talk to me about their babies and my eyes would glaze over. But as soon as I had a kid, oh my goodness gracious, you know, every little thing, he's holding his head up, he's taking the drink from a bottle now, he's able to hold the bottle in his hands. They're all major milestones, aren't they?
Oh, they so much are, and I am now completely that stereotypical mom that if I pull out my cell phone, I think there's 1,200 pictures of baby armed in heels, man, on the phone. So, yes, everything is so exciting. But what it really has caused me to think about, before our little man came into the world, I was already knowing that I had a sense of duty to protect myself and my family. That has just been magnified by an amazing amount since I became a mother. And so with that sense of duty that I feel to really protect my entire family now, it's really shaping how we're moving forward with Armed in Heels. And I'm hoping that we can really support other moms and other working women in identifying with being able to do the same thing.
Well, you know, certainly around the country, over the last couple of months, we've seen a number of stories where the reporter goes out to a gun store, talks to new customers. And we are seeing, again, a lot of women who are making this decision. And it's not a snap decision. It's not a spur-of-the-moment thing where all of a sudden they say, you know, I'm really freaked out. I'm just going to go get a gun, any gun. And this is something that they're actually – they've been pondering this for a while. And they've decided, all right, if I'm going to become a gun owner, I want to be trained. I want to feel comfortable with my firearm. I don't just want to own a gun. I want to know how to use it safely and responsibly and effectively.
Right. That's definitely certain. I heard Katie was on earlier talking about women going out and purchasing guns, and the leading reason being to provide defense for themselves and their family. So that's certainly something that women are concerned about. And that's not something that causes you to go out and get a gun for a snap decision. That's something that you really are thinking about and trying to make the best intentional choice moving forward for you and your family. But just as before, what we're finding is there's not necessarily an inviting route into the industry for women that don't know much about it. And so, as you know, my background is not with guns. The first time my husband showed me a firearm, I cried. It was terrifying, and I was very scared. And when I went to go learn more, I was just so intimidated by the industry. And so that's why we started Armed in Heels. But what I've noticed since even I've been gone and not really engaged in my family, is that as I return, it doesn't seem that much has changed yet. And so I still think that there's a lot of room for improvement in supporting women in a safe and comforting way into entering the industry so that they can also take part in all of the benefits and reap all of the rewards of being able to protect themselves and their families with firearms.
So what are some of the products that that you've seen that have caught your eye at SHOT Show this year?
I'm looking specifically for, in response to a lot of our customer base who keeps saying we can't find appropriate apparel to either train in, or we can't find appropriate concealment apparel that we feel comfortable with. So I have my eyes on lots of different new lines of tactical clothing for women to go out and train. Dickies has a great, exciting line. 5-11 has released some great options that I've never seen released in an industry. Those are both places that I've gone and spoken with the manufacturers to try to bring them to our women. We're also still trying to figure out how women feel most comfortable concealing their firearms when they want to choose that as an option. We know that in the past there's been lots of purse carry options, but many women aren't comfortable with purse carry, myself included. I'd much rather carry on my body. And if you're small framed or have lots of curves like many of our women do, that can be a challenge to find a good solution. So I'm out trying to meet with a few different manufacturers to see what they have to offer. And there are a few solutions, and hopefully we'll be able to bring them forward in the future to Armed in Heels.
Talking again with Dr. Jacqueline Kelly, and we love following the progression of Armed in Heels, and I hope that 2016 is going to be a fantastic year for you. If folks want more information, what's the website?
It's pretty straightforward. It's armedinheels.com. We're on all social media as Armed in Heels. But what I want for women to be able to do is to identify with us. And so I often try to make sure I share that, you know, my identity is a woman, as a wife, is a mother, is as an intellectual. As you know, my PhD is in education, and I'm out in my field also trying to move the field forward. And so I want women to know that we want to support all women. All women that are interested, you can come to us for help. And we're going to advocate for you in the industry. We're not just your retail location. We can be your voice also.
Absolutely. And you know, let's talk about the work that you're doing in the education field to try to change minds, if we can. Or not even change minds, but just inform and honestly educate people within the education field. One would think that imparting knowledge would not be a controversial thing. But do you get pushback for trying to bring this education?
I do. So it was a really tough boundary for me to be able to navigate being from an education world, which is generally not in favor of firearms at all, and then moving into the firearms space. I really dealt with a lot of struggle internally of, okay, well, how do I communicate both sides of this without getting shut out of either one? We definitely still have room for needing to communicate on both sides. And what I had an epiphany a few weeks ago. I was talking to a group of my friends, and they were making some claims that weren't supported by data. And as a researcher and PhD, that is my pet peeve. If something is not supported by data, I get very frustrated because I'm a scientist. They kept saying, well, we found it in the research. And I said, well, where did you find the research? And it was on the internet. Well, from a scholarly perspective, in academia, we only use research as, and we only consider research as scholarly peer-reviewed articles. And what I realized at that point is the general public does not have access to scholarly peer-reviewed articles. It's generally something you get through academic institutions. And at that point, I realized, oh my goodness, we have actual research with actual data that's valid and reliable. And then we have the public data, and both parties don't have access to each. And so, to kind of go back to what you're saying, there's a challenge because we have a miscommunication because not all the information is available to everybody. So my goal for this upcoming year is to try to close that gap. And so you're going to hear a lot about Armed in Heels communicating what is found in the literature for firearms and women in firearms and putting it into usable, understandable information so that everybody can understand it and everybody can be well-informed and speak about firearms.
Well, listen, we appreciate everything that you do, Jack, and I thank you so much for coming on the program. Enjoy the rest of SHOT Show, and hopefully again we can catch up very soon.
Thanks so much, Cam. Have a good one, and stay warm out there.
We'll do our best. Thank you again. Dr. Jacqueline Kelly with Armed in Heels. I'm not so much worried about being cold. I mean, I guess if the power goes out, then I'm worried about being cold, but right now I'm just worried about being snowed in here in D.C. I'm still trying to figure out how I get from... I got from point A to point B, Las Vegas to Washington, D.C. Now it's from point B to point C, D.C. to Farmville. Danny Lyon is shaking his head, shaking me off. Don't do it. Don't do it. I know they're talking about the snow starting here in D.C. at like 5 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, which is right when we get off the air. But it's coming from the south, so I'd be driving into the blizzard, which would be tough. It would also be tough to leave my wife and kids to shovel out perhaps 27 inches of snow, not only around the house and the cars, but around the hogs and the goats and the chickens, although they can stay in their coop for a day or so. But there's going to be a lot of work that has to be done on Saturday. So it's going to be a game time decision. I promise I will not do anything stupid or rash. Well, I can't promise I won't do anything stupid, but I will promise not to put myself at undue risk, but I would like to be able to make it home here before the winter weather strikes. Rob Pincus of Personal Defense Network is going to join us on the program in just a couple of minutes. Meanwhile, in Kansas, you know, the legislature passed a law regarding campus carry back in the last session here. Now the Kansas Board of Regents has approved a policy unanimously allowing anyone lawfully able to carry a concealed handgun to do so on public university campuses beginning next year. The region's policy, according to the Capital Journal in Topeka, Kansas, still generally bans firearms on campus, But beginning July 1st, 2017, anybody 21 years or older who qualifies to carry a concealed handgun under state law can do so on campuses. The author of this piece, Luke Ranker, says it may be a violation under the new policy to pull that handgun in defense of someone else, but not in self-defense. Really? The board, again, this is a unanimous policy passed by the Board of Regents. I think this is a good step. Don't get me wrong. I'm just kind of curious about the mindset that says, yeah, it's fine for you to defend yourself, but don't defend anybody else. Self-defense is a human right. But to tell somebody who may be in a position to prevent a crime or to stop a crime that is occurring not to do so strikes me as a little odd. I would imagine it would be, if that were actually put in play and the regents were to try to suspend or expel or somehow discipline a student or an employee who did act in defense of another, I'm guessing the good people of Kansas would raise a hue and cry that could be heard on both the left and the right coasts of this country. Don't you think? I'm thinking that would be the case. Regents Chairman Shane Bangerter said the law is pretty clear here. July 2017, the state law in Kansas changes, and campuses must allow students, faculty, staff, and visitors to carry concealed firearms unless security measures like metal detectors and security guards are installed at the building entrances. In other words, if you're able to provide a hard target or harden up your security, then those places could still prevent or ban the lawful carrying of firearms. But in those localities where there will be no armed guards, where there will be no real security measures, and there are going to be a lot of those places because it's impossible to harden up every possible target out there, in those places, those soft targets, concealed carry will be allowed. So each university is going to have to come up with their policy. But the policies must, according to the Capital Journal, the policies must allow for the safe possession and storage of lawfully possessed handguns. The policies must determine which buildings will be fitted with security measures, and only in those buildings would concealed handguns be prohibited. The policies must authorize the printing of information about gun policies on tickets to events where guns may be prohibited, and they must inform students who live on campus of dormitory gun policies. So we'll get a chance to see what these proposed policies will look like coming out over the next couple of months as the University of Kansas, Kansas State, and other state colleges and universities put these policies before the public. All right, when we come back after a quick timeout here on NRA News, Cam and Company, Rob Pincus of the Personal Defense Network will join us from Las Vegas, Nevada, and the Shooting, Hunting, Outdoor Trade Show. Stick around. We've got more NRA News, Cam and Company coming up right after this.
There is not a single day that goes by that I don't think about the incident, that I don't run those images through my mind. Terrorism is here.
Shut the door. We have someone attacking someone in the building. I was just informed.
I immediately exited my office. I went down to my personal vehicle where I keep an AR-15 rifle. I donned a vest that said County Sheriff on it and ran about the 130 yards to the customer service area. Many people were exiting the building. People were crying and screaming. It was a very chaotic situation.
We know that he's loose. He had stabbed someone in our customer service department.
I'm in the women's locker room, and I hear screaming. And that was the worst scream I've ever heard in my life. And it was Colleen. I didn't know she'd been beheaded. She's a grandma. She's a wife. She's a mother. And she's not here.
He came across Mrs. Hufford and attacked her from behind, ultimately killing her and beheading her. He then saw Mrs. Johnson, who had complained on him earlier that day. He was called in and suspended. He then went home, retrieved a knife, and returned to Von Foods to get revenge on certain people that he felt responsible.
Others who were right there at the time of the initial attack were kicking, hitting, throwing chairs, books, and they were unable to stop him. He was determined.
When I first saw him, it's just pure evil. His eyes look like they could just pop out of his head. I see this knife, bloody knife in his hand, and I just froze. And he ran after me, and the next thing you know, he started attacking me. I started slicing my neck.
When I first arrived down that hallway, I could see the knife raised above his head and strokes with the knife. I yelled at him to stop, and he did. He took a few steps toward me and then disappeared back around another hallway. I proceeded after him. This was also a time of shift change, so it was a time of a lot of activity anyway. Suddenly, he reappeared running at me and others near me at full speed with the knife still in hand, blood on his arm and on the knife.
And that's a gunshot. We heard three.
I yelled a couple of times for him to stop, and he did not. And just at about 12 to 15 feet from me, I fired three rounds, and he collapsed to the floor, the knife still in his hand. I stopped the threat.
Mr. Vaughn, he saved my life. And I thank God for him every day. You know, I say that's my hero. If he wouldn't have been there, I'd probably not be here today. And no one would have probably killed some other people also.
It could have gotten a lot worse. This guy definitely was not going to stop until he was shot.
I do not view myself as a hero at all. I have no doubt that Tracy Johnson would likely be dead today, as well as others he was targeting. He would not have quit, and had a firearm not been involved here by someone who was trained to use it, the consequences, though bad enough, would have been much greater.
And to this day, there's still a debate. Do you call what happened here workplace violence, or do you call it homegrown terrorism?
I don't believe there's any question that this individual was influenced to a great degree by the happenings of ISIS and ISIL and what's going on in the Middle East.
Information was obtained that he recently tried to convert some of his co-workers to the Muslim religion.
Obviously, there was some sort of infatuation with beheading. That's obvious from the Facebook post.
I believe there's a lone wolf attack aspect to this. I believe that he did hear the call of jihad and chose to, in this way, carry it out here.
What I found interesting is that the FBI refuses to call it terrorism because they said it didn't meet its definition. And part of that definition is intimidation of a civilian community. What more intimidation do you need?
The heinous and barbaric nature of this attack, I think, put everyone on their heels. I don't think the population of this country is convinced. You cannot take the attitude they're not going to happen to you or into your workplace. We need to know they will happen with more frequency moving forward. And so I believe that firearms should be part of that strategy by qualified and trained individuals. And to have those people allowed to have firearms in the building, have access to firearms, vigilance, preparedness. We still live in the greatest country in the world. I'm proud very much to be American, but we need to know it's going to be part of how we lead our daily lives moving forward.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company. SHOT Show 2016, our coverage, thanks to our on-location sponsor, Adcor Defense. Of course, I'm not in Las Vegas anymore. That's okay. I will say, I'm glad the show is almost over here because the red-eye flight, I think, is now officially catching up to me. I don't know about you, Danny Lyon. You feeling a little bit? Just a little bit?
Just a little bit.
It would have been even worse if you had not convinced me about the wonders of the travel pillow.
Yes, that pillow was great, wasn't it?
It was amazing. I always thought that travel pillows were for sissies. You know, I just thought you crumple up your jacket and you do the best you can. Nope. I'm sold on the travel pillow now. Never will I take a red-eye flight without a little micro-beaded pillow that I can fit snugly around my neck. All right, want to welcome to the program. Imagine how goofy I would be if I hadn't had that travel pillow. Oh, my gosh, this would be like 10 times worse, I promise you. Rob Pincus of the Personal Defense Network is with us on the program right now from Las Vegas, Nevada, in the Sands Convention Center. How are you, Rob?
I'm good, Cam. I'm glad you had the pillow. I'm glad you're alert. I'm glad you're you got home safe with that weather coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're halfway home anyway, and that's the it's had something. So tell me. I know the weather's fine, and it really doesn't matter because the Sands Convention Center is all indoors anyway, and you could spend 4 days not even seeing the sun in Las Vegas at the SHOT Show. Have you had a chance to wander the aisles? Have you had a chance to see maybe like even a tenth of the items and the companies that are out there at SHOT this year?
You know, I want to say I might have gotten to about 6%. I don't think I've gotten completely to 10%. I've got about 6%. You know, meetings, the first couple of days of the show were all about meetings. Today, I'm getting a chance to come obviously on here is great. We just did another media show earlier this morning. Tomorrow is my wander day. Day four, you know, most of the business gets done. We throw a few meetings in there, but day four, I like to try to catch up with old friends and see what's new on the show floor.
You know, and it is interesting because this is a trade show. And so there is the business that gets done. And it's not just the business between the manufacturers and the distributors and the retailers, right? I mean, you know, you've got folks who are having a lot of meetings with potential sponsors, and you know, a lot of just networking as you get to meet people that all right, in some way, shape, or form, I think you and I can work together, and it's those relationships that are forged at SHOT that I think are really, really important to the industry.
Oh, it really is. You know, this is my 20th SHOT show. And the relationships, the collaborations, obviously with Personal Defense Network, you know, we formed a lot of great relations with our sponsors here at SHOT Show, and people introducing people who know that they're going to be able to work together. People are saying, you know, come join our team, or I'm doing something with this other guy over here. You need to meet Rob. You need to be part of Personal Defense Network. You know, we're getting ready to launch our tour in March, and this is where we finalize a lot of those deals and a lot of those ideas for what we're going to be able to bring to our audience and what people are going to see in the information, obviously, that we put out with the NRA as well on personal defense. A lot of that stuff happens right here, or at least gets initiated here.
So tell me about the tour that you have. This is launching in March.
Yeah, so every year we go from March to July. This year will be the same as that. We'll start out in Florida down at my home headquarters down there in St. Augustine, and we'll end in Bellingham, Washington. So I'll go up the East Coast through the Mid-Atlantic up into New England, cross the Midwest, the Plains, the Mountains, and then end up in the Pacific Northwest. I'll personally do about 30 stops with the tour vehicle, put on about 30 different classes, probably hit about 21 states, and then we'll have 9 other instructors. We may actually add a 10th other instructor this year that'll be doing classes. We'll have a total of 70 events under the Personal Defense Network training tour between March and July. And people can learn more about that at personaldefensenetwork.com under the training tab.
That is amazing. All right. If folks are looking at this and they're thinking, I want to bring this to my neighborhood next year. How do you select the cities that you go to?
You know, honestly, it's one of the big missions of the Personal Defense Network training tour is when I'm in that vehicle, you know, you think about it. If I had to get on a plane, if I had to pack everything up, if I had to fly to the middle of a small town in one of the plain states, you know, the quote-unquote flyover states, if I had to go to Nebraska to do a course for 3 people, nobody's making any money. It's almost impossible to do. The range isn't going to win. The people, you know, they're going to get the training. They're going to get the win. But as a business model, it doesn't work. But when I get in that truck and I commit to 4 months on the road, I can drive through those small towns and build what we call training communities. So we just get people that reach out to us. They find me on Facebook. They reach out to Personal Defense Network. They find me at icetraining.us. You know, I answer all my own social media, Personal Defense Network. We've got a whole staff that answers all the inquiries and all the customer questions. When somebody says, hey, we'd like to host a class, we do our best to either myself or one of the other instructors to accommodate that request. You know, we try to fit it into the schedule. We make it make sense for everybody. And even if only 3 or 4 or 5 guys show up to that first class, we know that next year it's going to be 8 or 10. And next year, that same range or that same training facility might host 3 or 5 other instructors from around the community, not just Personal Defense Network contributors, but everybody that's got something good to offer in the personal defense, the self-defense, home defense, the protection side of the industry. Everybody's looking for places to train. So, you know, reach out. If you have that classroom or you have that range, if you have maybe that small gun shop, you thought, well, I could never get one of the Personal Defense Network guys to come out there, you'd be surprised. Reach out to us. Let us know. We'll try to work it out into the schedule.
How has your audience changed over the years, Rob? The folks who are calling you and signing up for these courses, has that group broadened over the past few years, or is it still basically the same type of folks you've been seeing all along?
No, if you look at my company, if you look at IC Training, you know, before the advent of the personal defense network era, which really started in the mid-2000s, what we were doing at the Valhalla Training Center, what I was doing was probably about 80% armed professionals. It was law enforcement, military, you know, some really high-end military guys, high-end law enforcement. We were reaching people who already had experience, and we were sort of starting to sharpen that point, right? Now, over 80% of our business is relatively new shooters. It's people that have joined the NRA. It's people that have subscribed to Personal Defense Network. It's people that watched our shows on the Outdoor Channel and said, you know what, I take this seriously. I want to seriously get prepared to defend myself and my family in a worst-case scenario. And really, that's what we're gearing towards. So instead of the next class that we come up with being, you know, the most advanced tactical whatever class for the high-speed operator overseas, the most recent classes we've come out with are really designed for what I call the base of the pyramid. The person who's in their 30s, in their 40s, hasn't really been a gun person, is new to the community, and their primary interest is personal defense. And that's really what Personal Defense Network is all about. That's what our communications is really reaching out to, is educating people that this doesn't have to be a lifestyle. You know, for those of us here at SHOT Show, this is our life. This is our passion. This is our commitment. Maybe we're enthusiasts. Maybe we're hobbyists with guns. Maybe we're recreational shooters. We're seeing a lot more people who aren't gun lifestyle people. Mm-hmm. They're just people interested in safety and interested in personal defense and interested in self-improvement. And they're coming out to the classes. They're buying the DVDs. They're reading the books. They're reading the articles. And I'm really proud of that. I love the fact that, you know, we can still get to the tip of that spear. It's a great honor to be invited to do that and to be able to participate in that part of the community. But I think the bigger mission of bringing more people from Middle America, more people to the NRA, more people to Personal Defense Network, more people to personal protection classes, that's a big mission for PDN.
Talk about that, because as you say, a lot of these folks, their life is not defined by their firearm, but they want to be competent. They want to be effective if they have to use that firearm in self-defense. Are they interested in the politics? Are they interested in defending that right to keep and bear arms? Or is that something that you have to talk about that, hey, you know, it's great that you're a gun owner and we're going to give you that training, but are you ready to step up and actually make sure that that your right exists 5 years, 10 years from now, 2 years from now even?
Right. It's something that comes with the education, you know, and it works both ways. Some people don't even realize that they have this opportunity, right? They may not have grown up in a firearms family. They may live in a state where, you know, maybe a lot of their neighbors would be thought of as anti-gun, or maybe the politics of that state aren't really super pro-gun friendly. And they don't even realize that these steps are relatively easy, that we can make it somewhat painless for them to get educated, to go through whatever they have to go through to own the gun, obviously be a responsible firearms owner, the responsible firearm storage. You know, in a week and a half, I'm doing a course in Denver, and it's called a Family Firearm Safety Seminar, and it's something that I do whenever I can at the local ranges, and it's not really a moneymaker. We go in, we invite 8 to 12 families to sit in with us. We're going to be doing this at the Bristlecone Range just outside of Denver. This course is full, but the Family Firearm Safety Seminar is really designed to answer all those questions for the family that has guns, but, you know, they keep the gun locked up in one safe and the ammo locked up in another room, and that gun isn't really ready if they need it, because the family, the members, the adults are saying, well, I've got kids in the house and I just don't feel comfortable with this. So what we do is we get the families all together in one room. I talk for about half an hour, 45 minutes about the general responsibilities and the things that you deal with as an armed family with guns in the house that are ready to be used in a worst case scenario. We send the kids to the range with some of our great instructors that just, you know, they're just great with kids. They're friendly. They make it accessible. Obviously, they're very safe. They're very thorough. So the kids go off to the range, and then I have kind of a heart to heart with the parents and say, hey, this is a responsibility. I understand there are concerns. You're right to have concerns, but here's how you deal with them. You know, I have a 20-year-old that grew up with guns in the house. I have a 7-month-old that's going to grow up with guns in the house. A lot of our instructors have had these experiences, and we can help people get over these hurdles. And then at the end of that seminar, after we're done with the hard question and answer with the adults, we take them to the range, and the kids and the adults all get a shooting experience together. And then we end up with a wrap-up of a, you know, Q&A, last questions, get some clarifications, you know, high five, good job, take a big group picture. And we hope that we've created a safer, more responsible firearms owning family with that seminar. And that's what I'm talking about when I say the base of the pyramid. The politics for them comes afterwards, right? They're not into it for the politics. They're not into it as a lifelong gun owner, but they find out really quick that, hey, yeah, this was easy for you. It can be easy for your neighbor. It can be easy for everybody else. We can make it easier in the future to be a responsibly armed family if you talk about it, if you fight, if you join the NRA, if you join PDN, if you help us communicate, if you go to social media and you share the messaging, then that's how we change people. So we're not beating them over the head with the politics at first, but, you know, the educated, responsible firearms owner realizes really quick that the politics are important.
Talking again with Rob Pincus of the Personal Defense Network. All right, Rob, we've only got a couple of minutes left here. So, you know, your message in 2016, I mean, it sounds like it is all about empowering Americans in many ways to defend their freedoms, to defend their life, the ones that they love. I'm just curious. I mean, do you see America right now? And I realize, you know, we're talking about a big country. We obviously know that there are anti-gun activists out there. But do you see, when you look around, a nation that is in the mood for more gun control laws? Or are we a nation that is in the mood to learn how to protect and defend ourselves? I mean, we see Hillary Clinton and other politicians, they swear up and down that this is the year that that gun control is going to win big electorally. But I'll be honest with you, I just don't see it.
Now, in the Democratic primaries, it might win big. It might sound good. It's tough talk. But I got to tell you, that's not what I see in the grassroots of America. It's not what I see coming to classes. I see people from every part of America, diversity wise, demographic wise, and even politics wise, interested in personal defense. You know, that's my thing. And I know I'm hearing the same thing from the guys that are into the gun games, the competition guys. I'm hearing that. I'm hearing the range owners. I'm hearing the store owners all say the same thing, that more and more people are getting comfortable with the idea that some of the cliches, some of the stereotypes that are being put out there by the anti-gunner of who the gun people are, they're looking around the gun shops and they're not seeing that. They're seeing America. They're seeing a diverse group of shooters. They're seeing a diverse group of people interested in personal defense. And that's certainly what we're welcoming and we're looking for and recruiting, and that's the message for 2016 for me is, you know, I don't really care what your politics are when you get in the voting booth if you're interested in personal defense. I want to help you be safer. But guess what? Once you're interested in personal defense and you learn how to be safer, we start to see your politics change for the better in terms of personal freedoms of all kinds, including, of course, the right to keep and bear arms.
Well, listen, Rob, we appreciate all that you do. I'm really glad we had a chance to get you on the program. I'm sorry I couldn't be there in person, but hopefully we'll get a chance to catch up again very soon.
For sure. Thanks a lot, Cam.
Thank you, sir. Rob Pincus joining us from Personal Defense Network here on NRA News, Cam and Company. We do, unfortunately, only have about a minute or so. But let me tell you who is scheduled to appear. Now, of course, at SHOT Show, things happen. Meetings are held. People get caught up in the crush of attendees. So all of this subject to change. But scheduled to appear on tomorrow's program, we'll talk with Brian Tatum. Also, Jen O'Hara with Girls with Guns, our friend Bob Owens from Bearing Arms. We'll head over to the Nosler booth. Carrie Pickett will join us as well, a journalist from the D.C. area. Also, on the program tomorrow, we've got, I believe, Melissa Bachman is scheduled to be with us, and many, many more, as many guests as we can jam into a three-hour period. That's who we'll be talking to on tomorrow's NRA News, Cam and Company. Thank you so much for being a part of this edition of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler. And thanks again to our sponsors, Nosler, and our on-location sponsor, AdCorps Defense. Have a great rest of your Thursday, and we'll see you here soon with another edition of NRA News, Cam and Company.